Need glasses, man?
Well, I can read without it, but it's just...
Strange.
Yeah. If there's a lot of light, then I can read. If it's not so much light, then it's...
Need more light than this?
No, because it's means that otherwise it ruins the atmosphere. So, Avasya Rakibe Krishna, Vivasa Alam. Now I have understood, O Lord, that your feet are eternally full of sweet nectar, that dispels all sorrow and fear. Surrendering myself and all I possess unto those lotus feet, I have laid myself down submissively under your shelter. Your lotus feet, O Lord, will certainly shelter me. There are no other protectors in this world of birth and death. At last I know myself to be your eternal servant. Now the burden of my maintenance is exclusively yours. In my life of independence from you, I have experienced nothing but misery. But now, upon accepting those feet of yours, all my miseries have been cast far away. Desiring a place at your lotus feet, the goddess of fortune performed difficult austerities. Only after receiving your feet did Lord Shiva attain his Shivatva, or quality of auspiciousness. Upon obtaining your feet, Lord Brahma had his desires fulfilled. Your feet are always held by the great sage Narad Muni within his heart. I now hold on my head those very same lotus feet which drive away all fear, while I dance in great ecstasy, singing their glories. Your lotus feet will surely deliver Bhaktivinoda from the dangerous pearls of this worldly journey. So by taking shelter of the Lord, you see here sorrow and fear. Fear then is that fear of our relationship. See, because if Krishna is the enjoyer, right, he is the enjoyer, then how will we be the enjoyer? So immediately that brings fear. And then from that then comes lust, right? Because then our love for Krishna, which is based on our, you know, service for Krishna, then that becomes reduced, so that love turns into lust. Right? And so lust then always will bring sorrow. So we see here this sorrow and fear are there. So then we see there are no protectors in this world of birth and death. Okay, so now we see this problem here. So it's like we're coming out. Right? It means we're in the material world, we're very much absorbed. Then we see that it's not so what we actually think it is. Then we're pulling ourselves out. Then here is then protection from the world of birth and death. Then we see the world for what it is. Then it says, at last I know myself to be your eternal servant. Now the burden of my maintenance is exclusively yours. So with this understanding, then we can see yourself as Krishna's eternal servant. Because that's where it starts. If we're Krishna's servant, then it runs nicely. If we're his servant, then we're not afraid of that relationship and we have love for Krishna. But when that's not there, then we see that that transforms, because then we're the enjoyer, we're the controller, so we're afraid of the person who actually is. Right? And then that natural affection for Krishna then will transform. Because we want to enjoy. So that love for Krishna then will turn into lust for, you know, what we see in this material world. Like that. So then here, that's the key point, is if we see ourselves as Krishna's servant.
Yes, one thing that comes up to my mind about that is that we may not feel a fear of relationship with Krishna or his associates that are there, we may feel the fear of relationship with devotees who are here, who are playing the role of guru.
Well, the same time is That's because, in one sense, they're not here. You know what I'm saying? Krishna is there, but Krishna is not coming to you and saying, hey, this is nonsense.
I'm not talking about it from that level, Maharaj. Oh. I'm not talking about from the absolute level of coming in contact where they have transparent my meaning. I'm talking about coming into contact and not being sure of what you're coming into contact with. That fear comes when you've had experience of two gurus who demanded full surrender and you're quite happy to give it because you saw them as Krishna's representatives. But then they weren't above enjoyership, and actually they were exploitative in their dealings with Krishna's energy and the Prabhupada's property in many cases. So like, how does one deal with that fear? It's sort of not fear in terms of it's not fear in terms of not wanting to give up in the joyship. It's fear in terms of not wanting to be exploited by someone who's not in the proper position to exploit.
Yeah. Well, the question is it's not exploitation. It's a matter of relationship, the rasa.
If it's bona fide, that's true. But if it's not, I mean, that's
no. That's there. That is it. What I'm saying is now we're going into the view of it. Like that, you know, just like we were saying, oh, these kids are making trouble and, you know, disturbing the spiritual atmosphere. But they're disturbing, yes, the atmosphere of the mode of goodness, they're disturbing, definitely. But we can go beyond that. Of course, generally the process is that since we're not beyond that, therefore we endeavor to create that atmosphere. But the point is there is a limit to our being able to do that.
Yeah.
It's up to Krishna. If it works, then it works, and if it doesn't work, then it doesn't work. So at some point, then we see is that it doesn't, no, it's still wet. It doesn't, at one point, ultimately it doesn't work. Like that. It means once we've come to a completely pure platform, then there's no need for those things to happen.
Right.
And or Krishna will arrange them because it won't bother them. And then we get inspiration how to go on. Like Draupadi doesn't need to be, you know, stripped in the assembly. The Pandavas don't need to be sent to the forest like that. They're already. Okay, Bali Maharaj, yes, he wasn't. But he by that he surrendered. But the Pandavas are simply setting example for us. Means, you know, whatever. You can't, I mean, somebody who was worried, oh, you know, I had position lost. I mean, no one's got more of a position than emperor of the world, you know? Then they can say, well, this is unjust. But nothing's more unjust than the throne is rightfully yours. I don't know if I explained, was that? I can't remember if it was here in Bombay. Explaining this. The according to the Dharma Shastra, a blind son has no right to any inheritance at all. Nothing, not even one speck of dust. But the other brothers are expected to take care.
We talked about this in Bombay.
Yeah, okay. So therefore there's no question that Dhritarashtra or his sons should be sitting on the throne. There's no question. It's not even a topic for discussion, let alone to happen. So what can be more unjust than that? It's rightfully 101% their throne. It's not a question of, well, he's a brother, maybe. No, it's totally their throne. No other, nothing else. Like that. But they're not having it. Okay, they ended up with half the kingdom. Or they're asking, okay, at least a few villages, five villages. They're not even given that. So nothing's more unjust. So that you can't find anything more embarrassing, more unjust, more of a loss than what they went through. But they don't have to go through it for their own purification or benefit like that. So generally the tendency is that if we, you know, learn by hearing and surrender at such a fast pace, you know, like that, then of course these things don't need to happen. You know, like that. I mean, so they may, but it also won't bother us. It can be also an example for others. So then we can fall into that category also. For our own purification, it's not necessary. But for example, for others, and it's nice. And also then Krishna to see how we react, because it creates rasa. It creates like that. So we're speaking on this level, like that. It's not saying that we're at that level, but it's a matter of we're discussing that so that we can go beyond the level that we're at now. Because otherwise the tendency is by our own endeavor, by our own arrangements, that is what will get the result. You know, it's a matter of I do the activity, I get the result, because I'm in control. You know, and if it didn't work, then this one did this, that one did that, and so many things. But actually, the only reason that things happen like this and don't go the way we want is because Krishna. And the reason that he's doing it in that particular way is because that's what we require. You know? Because material nature is bad. It's just, it means bad, meaning if we're looking at it from the way of, you know, being absorbed in Krishna and being nice, and it's not. It's bad. Here is the place for all the bad people. Material nature itself is not bad because it's Krishna's. It's Krishna's. It's Krishna's energy, so there's nothing bad there. Nothing bad. But the people here, then the tendency is, because of their conditioning, is they're trying to exploit. So everyone's exploiting. That's the thing. So now we can look at it from that platform of them not qualified exploiting, this, that, but we can go beyond that. We see Prabhupada went beyond that. I mean, I know those people before when Prabhupada was here, and I also knew them afterwards. And they were more advanced. They were more qualified in that than much in certain ways than when Prabhupada was there. But they weren't careful. They allowed weeds in their heart to grow. The weeds were already there. They didn't get planted late. They were already there. But they weren't careful. They got overconfident, this, that. So Prabhupada looked beyond it. You know, Prabhupada looked beyond it, and he saw what good they were doing. So therefore, it's a matter of you have something, and that benefit is there. That the thing is, you're surrendering to Krishna, right? And they're in the position of a bona fide person. And here, 1 second. That's good. Another tacky question. With that, who's your guru? Krishna Kshetrapur. Krishna Kshetrapur. Okay. First and second? Okay. These days you have to ask these questions. Okay. So then, we're surrendering to Krishna. They're bona fide because they've come in the bona fide line, they've accepted from the bona fide person, and they're following that process. And they're telling you about the process. Now, they may have their shortcomings, they may not be able to follow up to, you know, the ultimate standard, and in some standards might even not be very high at all. But still something is beneficial. And we ourselves not being perfect, there's always something we can gain. Right? Means an intelligent person can get gold from a, you know, dirty place like that. So, how do you say, let alone like the sadhu, he had 22 gurus, right? You know, and very few of them were, you know, nityasiddhas. You know? So, that is possible. Of course, you know, a bee, you know, doesn't generally, unless they sting you, doesn't do so many things to bother you. You know?
There's no interaction
either. Yeah, there's not much interaction. But the other, on the other platform, is that we can still. The point is the sincere soul will get. So then what is here means we can look at it from the spiritual platform, is that connection is there, we're moving on like that, we're making that, and then basically that connection through that person is not able to be continued. Right? Because the life of it is not the diksha, but the siksha. That's the life of it. So that's not continuing. You know, I mean, yeah, it means it's not continuing. We don't want it to continue. You know? So that way, so that is the loss on one side. The other, the emotional loss, we have to see, is it spiritual emotion or is it material emotion? And if we're not very advanced, there's a good chance it's material. Of course, it's been material emotion dovetail in Krishna's service, so it becomes spiritualized. So in that way, we are we are benefited by it, we advance by it, we're purified by it. But still, it's a matter of the attachments of, you know, the mind, and that is what has been disturbed. Because Krishna is still there, his process is still there. You know, the acharyas are still there, the Prabhupada's there, the books, everything's still there. But those persons that, you know, we have that trust and all that in, then, and the reason for that is because one is Krishna's process. He gets satisfaction from somebody approaching him through his devotees. So the principle is still good. So it's not so much the person cheated us, because they, in their own way, were trying to do their best. But not being necessarily mature enough in the process, they were not, or aware enough, due to whatever reasons, their you know, lack of knowledge or you know, their ego or something. Then they didn't realize these things were growing, you know, in the heart, and then they become strangled by it. So it becomes obvious that these things go on, and it's not just it happened here. It's the Shastras are talking about it also. It's not that things didn't go on in days of yore. These things are happening. But it's just a matter of you know, that's, it's, you know, it's like earthquake in Turkey. You know, it's very sorry, you know, very unfortunate, you know. But if you happen to be in Turkey, then it's another thing. You know, how come the world is not coming to our rescue if you're there? And if you're not there, you know, poor people, you know, then you turn the page to the comics, you know. So it's just a matter, since it happened to us, then it becomes very real for us. But in the scriptures, it's also there, the stories are there, things, so we can get that reality from there. But generally, the tendency is hearing isn't the how they say, the most pronounced way of learning, you know?
It's not so much a feeling of being cheated, because others very much benefited by both of them, but it's more in terms of like not having a lot of time to waste, and not wanting to, you know, like, also in terms of lack of, there's certain tendencies there that may attract a certain kind of personality, and again get myself entangled in a situation that's not what I'm actually full-heartedly, you know, what I'm really actually wanting to achieve, you know what I mean? So, I'm not feeling it in terms of feeling cheated by them or like that. They both have their part to play, I can see that. But it's in terms of, like, you know, you have your aspiration, and, you know, like, you don't want to see, and things appear to be going pretty smoothly as they are in the Prabhupada's shadow, so why run the risk of making a mess again? It's more that, maybe that's also just more of goodness, disturbance.
Yeah, well, that aspect is there, and also then that's, we're very confident of ourselves that we are going to be able to take shelter of Prabhupada.
Not that Prabhupada is incredibly merciful.
No.
It's very open.
It's, yeah, yeah. No, that's there. But is that we're going to be able to see everything. See, the advantage of when people are around is that they notice things that aren't necessarily always going so good, or can encourage us where it is going good. But it's specifically where things aren't going so good. That is the important thing, because otherwise ourselves may be getting so much, but we may not be noticing so many other things. So in one area it may be developing, but in other areas it may not be developing at all. Mm-hmm. You know, or something's going wrong. So that's why we're always in the association of devotees. You know? That's why we're always in the association of devotees. Then in this also, if it goes down to just that exclusiveness like that, then we find also that we run the risk of that we might not be dealing with it in a very mature mentality.
I'm not talking about Prabhupada only. I'm not excluding the association of devotees. But in terms of seeing him as a safe and extremely bona fide, like, you know, I put it very bluntly, if that's okay. If by the Lord's arrangement you're in a situation where you have contact with a pure vital medium, why do you want to put someone in between you and that pure vital medium who may not be?
Yeah, but the thing is how solid is your contact? That's the point. Otherwise, Hari Prabhupada, why not Bhaktivinoda Thakur? Why not Rupa Goswami? Jai Ho.
You okay, Patrick?
Yeah.
That is my point. Because otherwise, then why does Krishna give the system? Because in there, then it's not a matter of you're putting someone in between, because if you're putting someone in between, if it's seen as putting someone in between, then it does kind of have the feeling that it comes back to the Kanista level. Because here, the sadhu is willing to put 22 living entities in between. Right? So the whole point is that if there's something to gain there, therefore the association of devotees so much is to gain, then therefore why just a guru, any other devotee? And then ultimately he Krishna makes the point, even from your own body you can learn so many things. You know, the temporariness of this material nature and all this. Even the body becomes, your own body becomes guru. So the point is it's a matter of if we're advancing like that, where we can take advantage, that means that we're able to see in a broader sense. It doesn't get narrower. The narrowness then is the... Yeah, it won't be such an advantage. Because nothing gets in between. There is nothing in between us and Krishna. The only thing in between us and Krishna is our anarthas. That's the difficulty. Is those anarthas are in the way. So it's just like, and yeah, I mean, it's a difficulty and time to waste, but that means then you're saying time before was wasted. Yeah, but if it's not wasted, then where will the waste be? It may be, it's a hassle. You're cooking in one pot and then, you know, the preparation sticks on the bottom, so then you just quickly grab another pot and dump it into there, and then that fire goes off, so you quickly light the next one and move the pot over, like that. So, but you get the cooking done. Like that. The cooking gets done. It may be more of a hassle. It's much easier. You have one nice fire, one nice pot, and go right through. But it gets done. So if the subject got cooked halfway in that one karai, and then you got it cooked another few minutes on the other fire, then we have to be very careful that it's not seen as a waste of time. It did cook. We are advanced.
What did it taste like?
That for someone who's expert, it'll come out. Sometimes that kind of cooking, it comes out so amazing. I've had preparations, I know this is terrible. And like that, and I was so much absorbed in thinking about, you know, how the Lord, you know, is going to be able to eat such a thing. And afterwards, it was the best preparation. While times when, you know, you do something wrong and you don't worry about it, you know, what can you do? It comes out terrible. So it all depends upon, you know, whether Krishna, like, because Krishna's eating the consciousness. The items themselves aren't, I mean, oh yeah, he's eating what's it?
Brahma?
No. Krishna just one time went off to some out of the way place to see this one king and this one Brahma.
Shrutadev.
Yeah. And he was feeding them banana peels. And Krishna's eating them very nicely. You know? They're fabulous banana peels. You know? So that's the thing. If the consciousness is there, it'll work. Because the one thing is, you know, the background of fun, the pastime of, you know, just, you know, you're just introducing this whole, you know, advanced Vedic culture, advanced process of devotional service and the pancharatric system, you know, into a bunch of, you know, wild Western people. There's going to be a lot of things. Now the thing is if we're very attached to things going how we plan them to go, then yes, there will be great disturbances. But the thing is, like, if, you know, Yudhishthira, you know, plan like this and that, and then the next day they're out on their ear. You know, then, after that, they had the gambling match, and then they lost everything. Then they all thought, oh, this is not good, you know, they're all our relatives. They gave everything back. And then they rode off, and they're going off down the road, you know, with everything. And then Duryodhana said, nope, this is not good, you know, the Shakuni and all that. And then they sent messengers after to go get him to bring him back. And then they gambled a second time. Like that. That's then when they went to the front. Otherwise, they had already lost everything the first time. Like that. So you can imagine you're going there, you know, relatives, and it's a gambling match, and you lose everything, and they give everything back, then you're going off, and they call you back again, you know? But he's not going, hey, Krishna, what's going on? And, you know, this and that. So, in other words, it's a matter of trying to open the consciousness that there is levels beyond. We may not be at those, but we have to open those doors, and we have to at least be willing to look through the door, you know, and then slowly be able to go through the door. So we have to see is that there is no, the only unfortunate situation is not to be Krishna conscious, but there's no material situation that's, you know, either overly good or overly bad. Just like the Vaishnava is not supposed to be overly attached or overly detached to material nature. Otherwise they can't deal with it properly to engage in Krishna's service, because it's Krishna's. So you can't be overly attached to it, because it's Krishna's. If you're attached, you won't engage in Krishna. If you're detached, you don't want to deal with it. How do you engage in Krishna's service? So there has to be that balance. So in that, then what we see is we've gone from this to that. So it's not a matter of wasting time. The process is there. You know, Prabhupada's there, the books are there, everything's there. And we take advantage of the association of Vaishnavas. And so that works. So that principle has to be there. Now, how focused it is another thing. That's another thing. But there must be that the association of the Vaishnava community and hearing from them and taking direction from them, that is a principle that can't be ignored. So if we have if it's dynamic, if it's alive, then that's the best. You know, and if we're off somewhere and, you know, nobody comes around and all we have is the remembrances, the instructions of the past, that works, because the instruction is always dynamic. But if it's fresh and always ongoing, then that's... So that principle has to be there. So it's a matter of, it's not somebody between Prabhupada, it's somebody with Prabhupada. They're just like Rupa Goswami. Is Rupa Goswami between us and Krishna, or he's with Krishna?
In that situation, I was talking more specifically about that person who is in that position but has desires and things that make him actually not qualified to be in that. I'm not talking about the general association of the roads of taking section. I'm talking about the formality of guruship.
Well, it's
just something I wanted to be able to get your understanding.
Because you have to be very kind of careful in these. One has to be very gentle. Gentle. Because a devotee Vaishnava is gentle. Like that. So then even these things you have to be... Because the point is what's good is taken, what's not good is not taken. Like that. So that's the whole point, is that what's good, you associate with that. You leave what's not good. That's the principle. If it's not good, you leave it. Why bother? Why let it bother you either? You know, if you can do something about it, great. And if you can't, then not. As long as something's there, but those, you know what the standard is. But where those weaknesses are, then you should be taking advantage of other association. Because somebody has those qualities. I mean, it's the 26 qualities of the devotee you can see somewhere. You may not see them, ideally, you can see them all in one place. You know, like Prabhupada and the Acharyas. But if not, you have one quality here, one quality there, or even one quality is divided up. You know, somebody is good to this point, another at this point, another at that point. And you put that all together and you get your inspiration. So, That is the point of the bee. You know, the bee is able to collect what's good. It doesn't take too much.
It only takes what is there. So in that way, then there is nothing. There is no disturbing situation. Not for a spiritual advancement. Material advancement, yes, because that's what it's based on. Material, there's good and there's bad. So good means it'll be prosperous. Bad means it'll be unprosperous. You know? So there it may be. You know, some things there. You know, you have, you know, termites eating your wooden frames. So spiritually, it's not bad in one sense, because then, you know, all the nice work you've done and you care about it so much, then you can just see that the material energy can just, in a moment, just destroy anything. So therefore, there's that surrender to Krishna. Same time, in a sense, you know, it belongs to Krishna and it's your duty to take care of it for Krishna. Then it gives you some service. Now you got to figure out how to get rid of them. You know, like that. But materially, then yes, they eat that and then the window doesn't work properly and that, it makes a disturbance. But that's material. The sense is Krishna's window. Then it's a matter of organizing that. It becomes a spiritual thing.
Essentially, what you're saying is, if you feel disturbance, it means that that's just dirt in the hole.
Basically. Same time is that if there's something and something's said wrong and there's a disturbance, it's because it's not spiritual. Like that. So then one, you know, adjusts from those situations. See, there's different ways to approach this depending upon what is our angle of viewing it. Like that. So sometimes one angle will be opposite of the other, depending upon what is the mentality. You know? So if they're saying something that's not Krishna conscious, yes, then that is a disturbance. We avoid that. And so then, in that case, we take advantage of others' association. Yeah. And if they've proven themselves that they have a tendency to not say things very good, then we tend to look elsewhere. But when things are working, then these other things, those are there. It's one has to be very, very careful. Difficulty comes is because we're generally looking for excuses ourselves to, you know, how you say, keep ourselves in the material world. You know, we're looking for excuses to not go back to Godhead. You know, like, you know, well, if he couldn't do it, then how I'll do it. He was a big devotee, I'm a small devotee. So therefore, you know, then everybody goes out and does the same thing. That's because they would like to do those things, but before they didn't have a good excuse. And so now they have an excuse, and naturally, in other words, why would they bother? The philosophy didn't change. If we want to go back to Godhead, the process didn't change. Nothing changed. What changed is that the person that you were inspired to do it is not there, but everything else is still there. You know, so it's not ideal. You know, here we're speaking tattva. We're not talking about the lost relationships and all that. But just that it's still there. So one can go on. You know? One can go on. But yeah. So if one is actually, the more expert one becomes at the process, the more one is able to take advantage. And, you know, one can cook in anything. You know, it's like, you know, a pot's not there, you get out the chapati plate and cook on that. You know, it's like, you get it done. It may not be the greatest, maybe definitely a hassle, but you get it done. Because if we want, Krishna will give. Krishna can easily give. Point is Krishna can arrange for us all the situations to get what we need. Krishna can easily arrange it, but it's just a matter of whether we'll take advantage of it, or whether we actually want it.
Yeah, that's one of the things that blew me out about the commentary on the first Ishopanishad. I think it's in the invocation, actually, that Prabhupada explains.
Ishopanishad.
Yeah, Prabhupada explains, and it's not that Krishna is only giving quantitative. Every soul has a quantitative share on the planet. But also that qualitative, that everyone has what they need to go back to Godhead. Every human on the planet, there's facility there for them to go back to Godhead in this lifetime. It's just a matter of what you're just saying now. But when I had an expertise to access it,
yeah.
and that desire to access
yeah. it. It's like you see devotees that became devotees by finding a Bhagavad Gita in the garbage can in the airport, you know. It's just,
yeah.
you know, just stuff like that come across. So it's, if you want, it's there. If you don't want, it's not there. You know, I know it itself, just where I, this, the, you know, where I grew up. I think the devotees came three times, but only in the third time did I notice. The amazing thing was, is the second time, Prabhupada himself came. And the place where I worked is where he did the program. The place where I would buy my vegetables and all that is where he stayed. And I would go to both of those places every day. And Prabhupada was there 3 days. And I didn't see. I was in the same building. Right? And this is after the devotees had come before and sold books. You know, I bought a magazine, put it on the table. My mother, of course, threw it away. My friend, for a joke, bought a book and gave me that I had. And I had this book. Everywhere I'd go, I'd take the book with me. I never read it. Like that. But anywhere I'd go, I'd take that book with me.
Which book was it?
That was Easy Journey to Other Planets. I used to tell my mother, he says, one day I'm going to look like that. She used to freak out. You know? Little did I know it meant being a devotee. I thought it was just the hair. You know? So the whole thing is that if you want, it's there. Devotees had already come. It means they were there selling books, so I could have come and come right there. Where my father lived in Los Angeles, it was 5 blocks from the temple. I never knew it because I didn't know Los Angeles so well. It was like, here was the temple, here was the main road, and if you go up the back way like this, it was over here, 5 blocks away. That means many years before, I could have bumped into the devotees because I used to go out walking, you know. Not that, get bored, just walk up the road. I didn't bump into it. I could have easily. In a 5 block area, I could have easily bumped into the devotee. You know, it didn't, you know, interest wasn't there. You know, too busy speculating. I mean, all I do is think about philosophy and this and that, but I guess I, you know, was happy with my own answers rather than actual answers. You know, so, like that. So, it's there, but you just don't take advantage. You know, just don't take advantage.
I suppose we don't have, not in your case, but in our case, that means we don't have the sukriti at that point in time?
Yes, or attachments. I was still under the, I was very much under the illusion that emotional exchanges between boys and girls had some actual substance to it. Mm-hmm. And it wasn't until after Prabhupada had gone, then when the girl had decided that someone else would be more suitable, then I started to understand that, you know, maybe it wasn't the ultimate answer to life. And all that. Then, a few months later, then I contacted the devotees. Mm-hmm. Like that. But at the time, as I was too bewildered by, you know, all these things, is that there was some substance in the whole, you know, like grihastha scenes. And only when I found out that it doesn't exactly work like that, you know, like that, then Krishna made the proper arrangement. Otherwise, yeah, it was right there. I couldn't believe it. It was some years later. Oh, I was reading in the... I only actually found this out about a year ago. A year like that, I was reading in either as a Prabhupada Nectar or in the Lilamrita, where it documented that time when Prabhupada went to the city where I was living. And it told where he stayed and where he did the program. I knew where he did the program. You know, You know, this is one of the things. Sometimes asking your mother isn't the best thing. Because I asked her about, I wanted to go to that program. She said, no. Like that. So, you know, so many things I asked her, and she said, no, I did anyway. But somehow, I remember that one. So then. Then I found out. I didn't know that he'd stayed at that place. The devotees told where they stayed, what they did, this and that. So it's like the devotees had to come three times there, you know, for us to get to convinced that it was enough's enough. So here, then, so we see that now the burden of my maintenance is exclusively yours. So it belongs to Krishna, whatever it is. So if it's going to be, if the burden is his, but since he's the master, he's going to take care of the way he wants. The master feeds the servant, takes care of the servant, puts him where he wants. Like if they have him living in this part of the house, they decide they want to do something with that, and so then they'll move them out to another place. They can't say, no, we like it here. No, that's not the servant's business. It's just... means they're surrendered, so therefore it'll be taken care of. So Krishna will take care. If you want to go back to Godhead, Krishna will take care. You know, you surrender to him, then whatever you need will be given. So, but whatever we need means a relationship to help us go back to Godhead. You know, so that may mean feeding us nicely, it may mean not feeding us nicely. You know, maybe giving us a nice place to stay or not giving us, or giving us, you know, nice other facilities or clothes and this and that, or not giving, or giving us respect or not giving us respect. So that is the thing. Then when we come to the point where it doesn't matter, then Krishna can do anything he likes. Then he can do some nice things. But otherwise, before that, then this tendency is So this is one of the main points is that it's exclusively Krishna's. It's not ours. It means we do our duty, but the actual maintenance is up to Krishna. What will happen? What will come? Is up to him. Like that. Because there's always the idea of I do, I get. But so many times we do, we don't get. Or so many times we don't do and we get. Like I remember. It happened to me, I can remember very clearly two times, but I think there was three or four times this happened to me here in Mayapur. I think generally average was about maximum was a week. Minimum was generally 5 days. Like that, 5, 6, 7 days. Didn't matter how hard I endeavored, I could not get anything to eat. You know, it means you go for lunch, means you're expecting rice, sabji, or chapati, sabji, like that. For a week, all I'd end up with just something, you know, here and there, you know, some sabji, a few samosas, some mudi, you know, just this. So you're not satisfied because you want a meal. And Krishna would just take this on for a week. And this was, in Mayapur, it's very hard to not eat, you know, because there's so many kitchens and so many places and Mahaprasad and this. But every time I go to the one, you go, okay, the guest house, there's something left over there. Oh, they just sent it to the front. Okay, you walk up to the big kitchen. Oh, the Gurukul just ate it. You know, okay, so you go back to the restaurant. You know, oh, you know, they just closed with that. Or they gave everything away to the kids. You know, you go over to the Gurukul and, you know, everything's finished. They didn't cook enough that day. You know, then you walk over to the big kitchen where the devotees are, and you know, somehow or another, you know, they had a different schedule and Prashad was early, it's all finished. It would just go on just day after day, you know, like this. And Krishna did this many, many times. You know, just to show, you know, it's like our endeavor is not what's maintaining us, you know. And other times, then he'll arrange, you know, two meals at one time. You know, and both parties are demanding that you have to be there and cancel the other one. It's like, you know, what are you supposed to do? Or you have something in the morning and then at noon and then this. It's more, you can't eat that much. You know, so Krishna shows, if he wants to give you, he can give you unlimited. And if he doesn't want to feed you, then it doesn't matter how you try. So, therefore, one has it's up to Krishna. So, I mean, I take practice, but the point is this is the reality. Because we surrender to Krishna, it's up to him anyway. But it's just a matter of if we think we're trying to take the credit for it or give the blame to someone else, like that, one or the other. Because we feel the action gives the result. But action's only giving result because Krishna sanctions it. That's all.
And if it's an action that Krishna approves of, being done by an approved person, you know, approved time, approved place, approved circumstance, then Krishna gives, you know, a good result. And if not, he may not give. But he's the one that's... So it's just a matter of either we figure that out sooner or later. The sooner we figure it out, the better. So that's the... This is very...
I also heard when Krishna says in Gita 66 that bad knowledge may surrender unto me, that he'll save from all sinful reaction, that reaction becomes his property also, and he can do with it what he likes.
Yeah, because he may give you some, may not give you. Whatever, it's up to him.
So he can give the reaction or not give it. And when and how he likes.
Yeah, means Krishna. If it's up to Krishna, he wouldn't give any reaction. He'd just take us back to Godhead. But we wouldn't necessarily be happy. We were already there and weren't happy. So we go back now. We still may not be happy. So then, and if he doesn't give the reaction, then we'll completely forget about it and just become absorbed in the enjoying mood. You know, the definition of sura means. Yeah, the definition of sura is one who in distress thinks of the Lord. Right? When there's a problem, they turn to the Lord. Asura means when there's a problem, they turn to their own intelligence, their own you know, endeavors. So we should note here that in there it didn't say that the suras or the devotees meant one who wasn't trying to enjoy himself or didn't completely forget about the Lord, you know, in an enjoying situation. Because it's understood, the neophyte, that may happen. You know, especially when there's, you know, overwhelming facilities. So what is checked is how they behave when the crunch comes. That's the thing to see. So that's why it's very important to take the definitions of the acharyas, because that's the practical point. The other point, you know, is no one's complaining much. You know, it's just like a child. Okay, when a child and he sees a big bunch of sweets or this or that, they act like a child, you know. They get overly enthusiastic, they eat too much, they talk too much, they make too much trouble. But no one, that's not a point where you judge if it's a good child or not. It's when now they interact with adults, if they're respectful, and deal properly, that's where you'll say, this is a good child or not. Right? But if you take it as that, oh, look at these kids, you know, eating sweets and yelling and screaming, you know, when they're on their own, right? You know, so they're not with adults like that. Then that would not be proper application. And we have to be very careful, because that nowadays is very popular. We make our own ideas of what is advanced and what is not. That's why the Prabhupada said 24 hours during Gesa service or this. Very simple things. And others say, well, that's too simplistic. No, that is the real thing. These other things, they're not even anything to do with reality. You know, oh, not moral or not this or not that. But since when does an ocean of darkness have any weight against, you know, one candle? You know? So that's the thing, is that if we really want to talk philosophy, then we have to look beyond that. In a moment, that could all be gone. You know? I mean, you look at why do you think these are? Krishna Karyanamritas, a top literature. It's written by a guy who, you know, his life was prostitutes. Right? So according to the modern, you know, how you say, modern morality, we shouldn't, you know, read this guy's book. And he was a whoremonger. It's just, you know. And not only that, he was very determined. I mean, he wasn't just, you know, happened to be around the corner and just dropped in. You know, I mean, he's going to great lengths to meet this woman. And then even after that, he decides to become a devotee and surrender. And then he goes after some Brahmin's wife. Right? But we see in a moment that his mood was such that it changed. And then everything's perfect.
Now, what we may catch is that, well, we can say yes, but look at what he did. He poked his eyes out. So that's serious. But poking the eyes out, does that purify anybody? You know, otherwise, if that's true, then prayaschitta would be a great thing. And Parikit, Maharaj Parikit wouldn't have asked those questions beginning the sixth canto. You know, like that. But the point is that was a symptom of his determination. Right? But the poking the eyes out, that itself is not the purification. He changed his mood so dramatically that it's there. And that was in a moment. It happened in a moment. So that's the that's the thing, is that the externals of it are not the actual thing, it's the consciousness. Like that. So of course, externals are symptoms of what's inside. What means inside and outside, you know, sometimes we talk, well, inside is one thing, outside. No, they're connected. So you can tell inside by looking at outside. Like that. But sometimes, you know, in behavior of Vaishnava, sometimes you can't. And in the devotional process, then you can't, you know, just take one exactly of the other. Like that. So you have an Alwar also. He was one of the Lord's eternal associates, and he got caught by one prostitute. Okay. I don't remember what his name was. He was just on his own, living alone in a hut. He'd go out every day and pick flowers for his puja. He was so absorbed in it, and there happened to be this. She was like the top society girl in I think it was Sri Rama. I think he used to do food service for the deity, bathe the deity or something like that. So then and he'd live in his cottage and he'd pick flowers. And just one day she came and saw the nice garden. She was sitting there amongst the flower bushes. And as he's picking flowers, then he came across and then she was sitting there and it was her face. And he went and says, "This is not a flower." And just moved over and kept picking over here. And, you know, being the top society girl who's used to be called, you know, flowers and this and that, and all, you know, nice euphemisms, then, you know, it's going to mean, what do you mean this is not a flower? You know? Let's see, you know, the detachment. So then, next day, there she was, it was raining, so she was sitting out in the garden, singing bhajans, because the Alwars all wrote bhajans. And she's singing bhajans, which bhajans happen to be the ones he wrote. You know, she's singing with great devotion. You know, and that's sitting in the rain, right? So two things happen when, you know, one, you know, someone sits in the rain. One, you feel sorry for them. And two, especially if they're ladies, when they get wet, you know, sitting in the rain, then it brings out more of their, you know, their qualities are more, external qualities become more. So she's singing, he said, "What are you doing singing?" No, I'm just singing. So he tells her, "Come in, sit on the veranda." So she keeps singing, and because she's there, then she does some service. She just does this for some days. You know, and till, you know, it just becomes so much there, and then one day she just, you know, she says where the name is. And then she leaves. And then after he leaves, then, you know, he goes to look for her. What happened to this girl? And he goes and, you know, looking this and that, and then he finds out where she lives, and she's like big society girl, so they have, you know, they have a lake, they have a fortress that they live in, and guards and everything, so, you know, he looks like a beggar, you know, like that. So he goes there to meet, you know, like this and that, and, you know, the guards toss him out of his ear, because, you know, and no one gets into her place without big bucks, you know, like that. And so, like this, then he becomes very disturbed and all that. Then he's sitting and lamenting, sitting somewhere, and then the next thing is then somebody comes out and tells him, "Oh yes, now you can see this girl," like that. She's calling him, like that. He's kind of like, "Well, I just got thrown out of my ear because I'm a poor bum, you know, so now how is it she's calling?" Then he goes there and finds out someone had delivered a solid gold pot, you know. You know, saying this is for you. You know, this person sent this, like that. So, and so then she was very happy and willing to see him. But then when he got there, he saw the pot, and it was one of the deity, the pots for worshiping the deity that he used to use to bathe the deity with. So then And then he asked who brought this, and they said, oh, this, you know, and she described who brought it, what he looked like and everything, and said he brought it from that. And he understood that that was the deity had come and given the pot, you know, because he had this desire to be with this girl, so he came like that. You know, same, like kheer chor goat, a little different. It wasn't that he wanted to taste the kheer for his deity. This is he wanted to be with a society girl. The Lord arranged this, okay. So then when seeing the pot, of course, then he remembered the deity and he's done that. And so then, you know, he left and went back to his service. Like that. So. But point is this whole morality is there to keep us from getting immoral, because that goes off the path. It means it goes away from Krishna on the path. Because immorality is part of the path. It's just the direction and the end that, you know, sends you to hell. So to avoid that, those things are there to keep one from falling down. But it's not the thing. Just like you have a trapeze artist, the net below is not part of the act. It's just to keep them from, you know, falling, that they won't fall down. So the path is something else.
But Krishna does seem to indicate in Gita that for the well-being of that path, which is his path, he does prefer that his devotees be exemplary.
Yeah, of course.
He himself, you know, absolutely.
Yeah.
What great men do, others will follow. Yeah. So, like, to me it seems to be a thing very sadly missing, and it's kind of the movement at the moment, that we don't have people being exemplary and they're following the Prabhupada's process, presentation of the way he wanted things, the way he wanted to give us Krishna. Yeah. So then nobody else believes that it works. Yeah. And then they go and they look for other things also.
So for preaching, that's true. And if you want to bring up the most amount of people in the quickest amount of time, that's true. But for us as an individual, that's another thing. So we have to separate the two. That's the thing. As preacher, yes, that is very much. But we see is Yudhishthira's chariot touched the ground for so-called telling truth. Like that.
Actually, I see it more in terms of it touched the ground because it didn't follow what Krishna wanted of him.
Yeah, well, that's the point, is that he stuck to mundane truth instead of spiritual truth. Spiritual truth is what Krishna wants.
But isn't it just as lopsided to his dressing? It seems to me that to stress not having morality as being like, put the two on an equal scale to me is...
We're not putting on an equal scale. Is that you brought up the point that you had two gurus before who were not following the thing. And what I'm trying to point out is spiritually, one can move on from there. And why does one have to live in the past of this fear that you are going to be a victim? Because why we shouldn't be a victim? What did we do to not deserve to be a victim? Right? It means... if this is happening to us, how many people did we let down in the past? But Krishna is so kind, he's reduced it so far to two. So we can imagine how many it should have been. Therefore, I'm stressing the point.
Mm-hmm, yes.
Is if we get past that, then we can talk about the balance.
Mm-hmm.
But if the one side is too much, the natural thing is to talk the other. And then it, when, if the point's caught, then you can get the balance. Because the thing is that the how you say it? It's part of the Dharma. If you follow the Dharma, the morality is already included, like that. But Dharma itself does not give you Krishna. It's a medium to use for Krishna. Just like you have a bell and you have some incense. Does the incense and bell give you Krishna? Or it's that you're offering to in devotion to Krishna. Right? And because now it's being used for Krishna, it's Krishna's paraphernalia. So if you respect it, you advance. You disrespect it, then you'll offense this thing. But the whole thing is the devotional service is the mentality. It's the mentality of that respect or of that devotion. You know, avoiding offense, you know, to please Krishna. That's the thing. It's not these externals. As we find, we're disturbed by externals. But as much externals there are, we find that there is, you know, an equal amount of internals. Just our own mind drags up, you know, like that. That is also a disturbance. So it means we have to be careful that we don't ignore those and just look at what's outside, distract ourselves. The mind is disturbing, so we distract ourselves by something outside, like that. One is that if, you know, we can't make anything of this, yes, that is the process to distract, because otherwise the mind will overwhelm us. But the point is that if things weren't going on inside, then there would be nothing disturbing outside.
Yeah, sure.
Like that. Like that. So as we become purified, as we become stronger, then we can start to also work on what's inside. And then also then we can become less disturbed by outside. So we're talking all this, all this is not being discussed in relationship to the preaching mood. All this is being discussed in relationship to our attitude on how we can, you know, move in this world and not be disturbed. Right? But not from the platform of goodness, but from the platform of pure goodness. Because otherwise, the platform of goodness, then also even something in the preaching that'll be a disturbance we may balk at. You know? Because preaching is a headache. So if we're very much into the mode of goodness, then the tendency is also not to want to preach, because then you know, or certain aspects of preaching, because it's a hassle. So then we have to learn to go beyond, because goodness means passion and ignorance is there. There is some desire to be freed from the material. And there is some ignorance that we don't understand fully that I'm serving Krishna, because we just want to be, in other words, we're interested in the liberation part, but the prema part, that may be weak. You know, our motivation may be, this place is so terrible, I want to get out of here. But ultimately the motivation has to be is I want to please Krishna, I want to love Krishna, I want to serve Krishna. If we get out of here or not, that's another thing. That's up to Krishna. Because if you have love for Krishna, you're not here. And even if you're with Krishna, if you're not in love with Krishna, you're not there. You know, Shishupal, Dantavakra, you know, Jarasandha, they were all there with Krishna personally. Saw him, talked to him, you know, might even have touched him. But, you know, didn't do them any good. Yeah. So that's the whole thing, is that the devotional service is something beyond these. But it's so complete, it includes these also. Devotional service itself is independent of any of this. Simply the desire that we want to please Krishna. If you can maintain that 24 hours a day, that is Krishna consciousness. It doesn't matter what the externals are, but because we tend to get distracted due to our conditioning, these things are necessary. Like that. So that whole science is there. Therefore, all these things are there. And then as you do them, then you're not able to progress to the point. Because someone on the platform of bhava does not require anything external for their devotional activities. Nothing is required, not even their body. The Krishna maintains their body, but it's not required. Nothing is required. No situation is required. Jara Bharat is sitting there, you know, sitting there in front of Kali, and they're telling him to put his head down on that thing. Okay, you know, they're going to cut his head off. And, you know, for him, it's a, you know, he's fully Krishna conscious. It's no problem. Doesn't, he's carrying this palanquin for the king, you know. And then, you know, the big king is there, and he's just watching that, you know, all Krishna's devotees on the ground, watching out for that. You know, so there's nothing, no situation that is disturbing. So there's no anything unfavorable. Like that. But the thing is until we become that detached from the material, until we come to liberation, we are affected by what's around us. Therefore, then there's a science on how to use what's around us in the Lord's service. And naturally, because it's come from the Lord, it will be all dharmic, all moral, all everything. It will be all perfect. So if we only take part of Krishna's system, then of course, then there'll be problems. So we have to take it nicely. But others, why is he saying Sarva Dhanam Parichada? Why is he saying give up all religion? because we're thinking the religion itself, that's how we start. It starts with Arjuna not talking morality, he's talking religion. He's talking way above morality. Like that. Therefore, all this has to be given up. So Arjuna fighting in the battlefield is giving all that up. He's just doing his duties as Kshatriya simply because it pleases Krishna. Not because, you know, as a Kshatriya, then this and that in our family. Because that's what he was talking in the beginning. You know, let us see who is here, right? Because we are the Kurus, we are the Pandavas. Who has come here with these others, you know? Like that, you know, their lineage and that. And then Krishna, he tells Krishna, you know, I always called you Yadu. Why do they call him Yadu? You can call him Krishna. Why does he say Yadu? Because Yadus are subordinate kings. Like that. They're not in that level. They're a group below. What's that called? The kings are. They pay tax.
They're ministers, not emperors.
Yeah. But they're kings in their own. In their court, they would be ministers. But in their own right, they're kings. But they pay... There's a name for that in English. It starts with a V. Where a king, he has his own area, but he has to pay tax to one above. And if this one wants, you know, he protects him, and if he wants him to help fight, then he... The technical, it starts with a, it's a word, vassal. Vassal.
How you spell that?
I think V-A-S-S-A-L. So they're vassals, means they're being protected by the Hastinapur kings, and they pay tax to Hastinapur. Same time as if Hastinapur has a war, then, you know, they're called. So it depends upon how they do. Especially if there's, you know, how you say, intermarriage and stuff, then it becomes very tight, and all those things. So, like that. So he calls them that because then it's kind of fun, you know. You know, here he is, you know, he's the junior, right? He's God, but he's the junior, and here he's the devotee, he's the senior. You know, so it's kind of some fun. So he's doing, then, you know, when he sees universal form, it's kind of like, you know, boppy bop, you know, sorry about that. So that's the thing, is devotional service. When Vishwanath opens Madhurya Kanda, it's free from karma. It's beyond that. It's karma and jnana are not the cause of it. Because you were moral, because you were dharmic, that did not create devotional service. It did not bring you to devotional service. None of this. We'll say, sometimes the devotees say, oh yes, you know, I was very, you know, philosophical and, you know, very interested in all these things. And, you know, in that way I was very qualified, therefore, you know, I came in contact. No, it's nothing to do with that. You could be a jnani your whole, you know, millions of lives and not come. Because there was a moment where you actually wanted to know what was the absolute truth. And then Krishna arranged it. There was some moment where you actually wanted to. So there is some attraction. You tasted the hollow. You liked that. There was that. Yeah, I like this. Not because it's spiritual or this. It just. So there's something. There. So that's the active principle. But it's put into this other thing. And therefore it's appreciated. Just like, how do you say? You have something. Like you have a sweet. Okay, the sweet's nice. Now I put it in, you know, some nice little, you know, container and decorate it nicely and then put that on some nice plate and put that in a nice sitting place and then create a nice atmosphere and put some nice music and lighting and this and that, then you'll appreciate it more. But the sweet's still the sweet. All the other things actually have nothing to do. It's just that your mind thinks, ah, this is good. Or I give something and I give you, okay, I give something once I give that, you know. But if I say, oh, we got this from this place, you know, very rare, you know how much this costs and all that, then you appreciate it more. Your mind really enjoys it. But if, you know, you just got it here, you just think it's ordinary or not noticing, it's nice. Like that. I've seen devotees eat things that weren't good because it's such a rare thing, you know. There was one devotee who was so attached to avocados.
And they had brought some avocados from Bangalore, and they're like 5 days to a week old. They've already started to go bitter, you know, when they get old. And he's eating them like they're nectar. And I'm eating something. He said, terrible. You know, I don't have any attachment for it. He was wonderful, because it's my, you know how difficult it is? This was also, now you can get them. But this was like, you know, 10, 15 years ago, when you don't see avocados in India. You know, they grow in Uti, they grow in one or two places, and except for in those places you don't see them. They happen to live there, or gone through there, he picks them up. So therefore it was like, you know, real special. So then you enjoy so much just because the mind says, I'm going to enjoy this. The thing that you enjoy may not be enjoyable, but the mind is. So therefore we create the atmosphere, you know, and then it's, yes, this is going to be some good, you know, like that. And then there's that aspect of it. So the thing is the externals of it then may inspire us. More the underlying it is that it's a medium for carrying the devotion. Like that. It carries the devotion. And then, because of the devotion, that's what's nice. Like, let's say you decorate the temple nicely. It's not the leaves that are nice, or the banana trees, or other that makes it nice and devotional. It's the devotion that went into arranging it. So they become a medium for it. So that's the thing, is everything is medium. Rasa is always through something. That's the whole point. It's not impersonal. Rasa is personal. Therefore there's already medium. But here we have to use inferior items that are material. On the spiritual world, then everything's spiritual. So the devotion itself, the devotee, the Lord, the paraphernalia, everything is spiritual, is transcendental. So it's all of the same spiritual quality. Well, here you're using something inferior, but, you know, it's just like, it's very nice if on Mother's Day then the child gives a nice, you know, thing of roses to the mother. Okay, then that may be a very high quality thing. But he may just go out in the garden and pick a few wild flowers. But if that mood is there, mother is just as happy with that. So it's just a matter of, it's the medium. So the mood is what's important. So the whole process of Dharma is that you want to offer something high quality in devotion to the Lord. That means it's on a pure platform of pure goodness. Therefore, the closest thing in this material world you can get to pure goodness is goodness. So items, activities, situations in the mode of goodness are the best things to use as mediums to offer it to the Lord. You know, that's Krishna. And so that means, for it to actually be there, it means it has to be according to Dharma. Otherwise, if it's not according to Dharma, then it'll be our own speculation. So therefore, passion and ignorance will come in. So it's the best medium. But ultimately, Krishna says, even that doesn't matter. Though he recommends that strongly. But ultimately it doesn't matter. You know, you had those vanaras, they're not exactly what you call them, the mode of goodness. You know, their activities and this and that aren't what you necessarily call the, you know, best examples of, you know, high Vedic culture. But their devotion was perfect. Therefore, then the story of Ramayana is, you know, heard. So even that ultimately doesn't matter. Like that, because Krishna consciousness is the ultimate Dharma. It is the ultimate morality. Therefore that song, you know, of Sri Rupa Manjari Pada, in there, you know. Mm. The dust from lotus feet of Rupa Manjari. That is my religion. That is my, you know, six activities. That is my everything. Because everything's contained there. But on this platform, then, I say, on this platform, it takes another form. You know, it's perverted. So we're taking all these perverted things, but according to Krishna's direction, we can use them. You know, just like you have a plant, you know, like let's say you have a kachu, these elephant ear plants, mm-hmm.
So they have a poison in them that grabs the throat like that. But there's a way to prepare it to get that out. And then when you get that out, it's considered one of the high-class vegetables. Like Lord Chaitanya, Man Kachu is like one of his most favorite vegetables. Like that. You see it mentioned, Man Kachu. Like that. It's the biggest of them also. And the one can, if it's not done right, can give the most trouble. But so, something is there, so that's taken out. You know, or the milk ocean, you know, perfect. Milk ocean, but it's still it had poison in it, and that had to be removed. So the material world is everything. All actions are covered by fault. Something's wrong. But if it's done for Krishna, then that doesn't matter. It's like the spots on the moon. Who cares? For ourselves, we look at the spots. But for others, they don't look at the spots. And we don't look at the spots in others. You know? Unless it's our duty to look at those spots. But otherwise, then... So based on this, then we're going into these other points, right? It means I'm working on the principle that this is, you know, already a discussed and understood platform. Then we're going into taking it farther, is that it's not the Dharma, it's not the morality, it's something more than that, it's a different thing than that. Devotion is something else. It's not because they're so moral, therefore they're advanced. No, they're advanced, therefore they're moral.
Isn't also Dharma like a pivot? Like, that's why Krishna wanted to get rid of the Kurus, because they were using Dharma for Artha Moksha, like Artha Kama, like that. But he wanted to see Dharma used to attain Moksha.
Yeah, that would be there, but they're also misusing it. Because you see other pious kings and all that, then it's also fine. Because piety is not something Krishna is encouraging, that, because from piety then it's a close step to transcendental, because it's in the right direction. They were impious. They're not actually technically in so many ways following Dharma like that. If they were their own brothers, why are they sending to the forest? Why are they trying to kill Bhima? You know, why are they trying to disrobe Draupadi? His own sister-in-law. Why they all do that? You know, it's so it's not moral. It's not religious, but there's other aspects of religion that are for the non-devotional element to at least keep them in line. They're kind of using those, but the higher principles of it, they're ignoring. But otherwise, it's good. They're good administrators, like that. Duryodhana, they're good administrators. Dhritarashtra is good administrator, like that. But because they're not connecting Krishna, there's no use. Plus, they're misusing for themselves. You know, they're not working on the principle of Dharma for Dharma's sake. They're working on Dharma for my sake. You know, but otherwise, you have these kings that it's the Dharma and the Vastu and the prestige of the family and all these kind of things. So that's glorious, but ultimately useless. You know, but. They were, kind of even more on the demoniac side, because they were misusing the Dharma, overemphasizing the politics, and that politics has its place, but they were misusing it, using it where it doesn't need to be used. Yeah, but then the point you're making there is that yes, Dharma is supposed to go up. That's the whole point of Bhagavatam. Dharma is used, but it must go up. But that the weakness is that devotees don't use Dharma.
They see economic development as independent.
Yeah, but that's foolish. It means otherwise, money is only coming because Dharma has been done. There is no other way, you know. It's like something cooked only happens because you cooked it. It's not that just mystically it happens. So they're not understanding the philosophy of it. It's ignorance. They think, I just go out and work and I get. Like that. I go out and get a job. Why did you get that job? How is it you got the job? Because of our own endeavor? No, because Krishna sanctioned it. Why did he sanction it? Because you had enough pious activities to get it. Like that. You know, and it happens to be how Krishna wants to give you your piety and impiety for your own, you know, benefit. But the point is you have it there to get it. How do you have the brain to do that job? Who gave you that? You gave it yourself? You made it yourself, you know, in third grade chemistry class, you created your own brain, or what? No. It already came before. From what? Previous life. Your education. How did you get educated? Because of previous life. Right? All these things, they already came from previous dharma. Mm-hmm. And now you're just living on what's left. You know? It's like the grandfather made all the money, put it in the bank, and then the grandson is then saying, yes, I work very hard. You know, I get up in the morning, I go and I walk to the next room and get the passbook, and then I, you know, call the chauffeur, and then we drive down to the bank, and then, you know, I walk inside all the way up to the counter, and then I give it to the teller and tell him, you know, give me, you know, $10,000. I work hard for my money. You know, what do you mean? You know, so no. They're not understanding. It's already coming from before. So it's, where did all that come from? You know, where did it all come from? So it's already from dharma. But if you don't do it right now, in the future it won't be there. It'll be lost. Because it won't create a further. So you can stop doing those things and absorb yourself in the higher dharmas. Means there's different levels of dharma. Means you have varnashram dharma. Then higher than that is the pancharatrik dharma. Higher than that is the bhagavat dharma. So you can situate yourself on one of those higher ones or take any mix of the three. Like that. But the essence is the bhagavat dharma. So the pancharatra, its essence is the bhagavat. The varnashram, its essence is the bhagavat. So therefore, those done with that. Otherwise, smartas follow all the rules. The pancharatra, we call them smartas. Or they follow all the Vedic rules, we call them smartas. You know, or they follow all the Bhagavad rules, but don't have them, we call them sahajas. Like that. So the thing is that we're trying to get to these... Yeah, we're trying to get to that level of consciousness. That's the essential. They're the perfect situation. You have to be situated somewhere in the material world. You know, we're not going to float into space. You know, it's not like Om Sai in the cloud and we're going to sit up there. And so we have to do something because lila means activity, right? So it's part of the material world is the Lord's lila. He's manifesting. Mahavishnu is dreaming all this. It's all happening. But he set this sankalpa, so it happens. You know. But it's based on what we want. So we want, just like, you know, the child wants something, you know, and the mother goes in the kitchen, makes it, or gets this and that. And so it's all, you know, the kid only wanted it. Kid didn't get it. Kid, of course, the tendency is to think, yes, I'm controlling everything because I wanted it. But actually, it's only because of the affection of the mother that they got it. Otherwise, you know, who cares for your desire? Like that, you know, you have so many kids sitting in the street, you know, and they want, and they're not getting it. Right? So it's because of the affection. So everything's happening here because of the Lord's affection for us. And if He fulfills our desires, even if we want bad things, He gives. So the devotional service is beyond these things. But we have to use something, because in a conditioned state we rely on the gross and subtle body. So those must be regulated by the pancharatrik and the Vedic Abhidhi. Must be regulated by that. Otherwise, if it's not regulated, we're not going to make any progress. But the real thing is the consciousness. Like that. So therefore you have this overlap of the Vaidhi and the Raganuga. And that's called Raganuga Sadhana. It's still within rules and regulations. It's still within that. But that's not your motive. So the consciousness changed. The activities are the same. Some take it, activities have changed. They haven't changed. You know, and others will take it that you just do the rules and that will get you a result. No, the whole point of the rules is just to give you an opportunity to remember Krishna and not forget Him. Like that. It's not that the morning bath gives you pure devotion. The morning bath, why are you taking the morning bath? Because you're going to go see Krishna in the temple. And when you take a bath, you're supposed, manasasnana, you're supposed to remember the Lord. So it gives you an opportunity to remember the Lord. You know, so it's just a way of you know, so many things, just to create a nice atmosphere in which we can be Krishna conscious. So the consciousness is important, like that. The desire is complete. And the others, they take the desire and leave the rules. But Raghunuga Sada is actually, that's the overlap. Right? Bhava, there are no rules. It's simply the mood. But it hasn't come to the platform of prema. It's still one is having to get rid of the effects of the Brahma-Bhuta platform.
Yeah. Right? Actually, that came up in Bhagavata class this morning. Because usually I ask, what did you talk about?
Sorry, I missed your class. Something happened and it stopped. Oh, I had to go get someone to do some medical things for Narasha.
It came up, usually we talk about eyes not even the sour of love in that vision. But it came up today in Prabhupada's book about eyes of knowledge. So I didn't have a chance to ask that question because I had to get on with some other things, but let me hear from one of you now. I said, like with that in knowledge, then it obviously means that there's realization in Satan Chit, but not in Ananda. But with Sava of love, then it's obviously that Lalini is there as well. So it made me think, what is the sort of, how does that work? How does the progression work? And you just mentioned it in terms of like, clearing off this.
You have tattva and you have rasa.
Right.
So, salve of love is rasa, but the knowledge is tattva.
But
point is without tattva, you're not going to get to the Brahma-Bhuta platform.
Then I can understand.
That.
But then I'm talking about like what you, it's triggered up from what you just said now about
because
getting
you
rid
can,
of that.
Because you can
residue.
Be in a neutral state, and you're not dealing with knowledge, but you're not dealing with love.
So how do you progress from there?
It means you have to be in the association of those who have that love. That's the key. The gopis that didn't go to the rasa dance didn't get the association of the Nityasiddha gopis. And why didn't they get? Because they were absorbed in, you know, their household duties. They weren't, Krishna wasn't, they liked Krishna, but it wasn't the foremost priority in their life, pleasing Krishna. So it means they're following all the Vedic activities. But it's the culture, it's the spiritual culture. Here it becomes a bunch of rules. It makes it. Otherwise how does the rasa happen? If you took away all those rules, it'd be a free for all.
We have experience.
Yeah. But I'm saying in the spiritual world there'd be a free for all. You know, how would Krishna taste rasa? Right? When he's with Mother Yashoda, if the gopis aren't in the back, how does he taste that? Means he can sit with the cowherd boys and still taste the parental rasa. And when he's with Mother Yashoda, he can still taste the friendship rasa. But the conjugal rasa is tasted, in from a distance. You know, it's like on the side, unknown. Secret, which is also part of that rasa. You know, the others are more, out in the front. Well, that's secret. That's the whole thing. The whole thing is always, it's appreciated. The more intimate, the more secret it has to be. So therefore, there has to be that. If that's not there, how will taste? So therefore, the rules are not actually rules. They're just how rasa works. And if you don't follow that, you get rasa bas. So it's not so. And you'll see that they'll even discuss these. They'll use it as means of rasa. They'll quote from the shastras. They're always doing that in the Lila. quoting from the Shastra here, Shastra there. Madhu Mangala is always, you know, misquoting the Shastra, you know, very technically misquoting the Shastra. You know, Bharat Muni says there's 8 kinds of rasa, but actually, in my understanding, there's only 6. You know, when I see, you know, the ladus and my hairs stand on end like that, and then when I taste them, then, you know, my body becomes stunned. And, you know, like this, he goes through all that. Like that. Yeah, so he goes through all like that. You know, it's just, so he does all that stuff. Or the elderly gopis, they call Mangal, and they ask him, you know, what have you studied? What do you know? Yes, I know so many things. You know, we're a great Brahmin, you know, the sun, the bunny, moon, this line. You know, what do you think? You know, they say, oh, yes, yes, no, sorry, we do. I'm not doubting you, you know. He's a little kid, right? And he's elderly, you know, ladies, and then they say, you know, very, very, you know, how do you say? Pleasantly, how do you say? How do you say? Well, I guess the word would be panache. He's endowed with a great, great storehouse of panache. So then, and then he, you know, and then they say, do you know astrology? You know, like that, of course, you know, quotes this, that, starts talking all kinds of things that have nothing to do with anything. And that, and then they say, you know, could you tell us, you know, why is it our daughters have no affection for their husbands? You know? He says, this kind of thing we wouldn't even wish upon our enemy. You know? Like that, that their wives would neglect them. You know? Even our enemies, we wouldn't want this. But in our own, we see our own daughters-in-laws, they completely neglect their husbands. And then he sits and thinks, and then he starts talking, yes, this, that, so many things, and then starts telling him, so because of this particular improper thing, therefore you have to do a special puja to
counteract.
Yeah, counteract. So then he says, yes, it especially gives some fancy name. It means, you know, Kamadev. He says, you have to go to the forest, you know, and twice a day or 3 times a day like this, and you have to pick flowers, and there in the forest, and you have to worship, you know, this Kamadev and this and that, and then in this way then you will see that their, you know, affection for the husband then increases like that, and then they're all very, very nice and they're very happy, and then they call all the gopis there, you know, the young gopis, you know, have been restricted to the house because, you know, this debauchee Krishna is wandering around in the forest of Vrindavan. And then he tells him, he says, no, you have to go out into the, you know, into the forest, and you have to pick flowers, and you have to do this Kamadev puja, you know, and this and that with, you know, so many things, and this way then your attachment to your husband or Krishna like this. And they're just sitting there going, you know, have I died and gone to heaven or what? You know, they just, you know, what's going on here? You know, hearing these people say this, they can't believe it, you know. Your Madhu Mangal is, you know, sitting there looking very, you know, very scholarly and very authoritative. All that. And then that's when the gopis started going to the forest. Or you always have them away out picking flowers, you know, and that. And then Krishna's always coming and telling them they're his flowers. So all this is going on because they use the Vedic thing. It's the means of rasa, you know. It's used and it's very compatible with the pure rasa. Problem is, in the material world, it's perverted. It doesn't mean that the form of it's perverted. It's the mood of it's perverted, because we use it for our own, for our artha, our kama, or for moksha. We're using it in this way, when this is not what it's for. It's actually supposed to be to create rasa for Krishna. But because we're conditioned and we expect these things, so Krishna doesn't mind that one performs the dharma for his pleasure, but along that the art and kama come, but you're not looking for that. And you don't exploit that. But it's there. One enjoys. Emotionally one's happy, materially one's happy. All these things are there. But that's only going nicely because you're only doing it to please Krishna. As soon as you're doing dharma to get artha, it may work for the karmis, if they're pious. You know? But if you're a devotee, Krishna may allow it if it increases your faith, or he may not allow it if it's not necessary. You know, if you've gone off and by his cutting it you'll remember him, then there's no need. But if it's a matter of, if you don't get some artha, you're going to leave God because you've gone to God for artha. So therefore, yes, then he'll give. That's what you want from him, so he gives it. But as you advance more, then at one point he'll take it away. So in other words, artha will be lost. It's just the way it is, you know. Either Krishna's arrangement or our attachment to it. It may still be there, but we've lost it, meaning that it's not ours, it's Krishna's. So, it will go away. So
that's different than artha, is obviously then very different than maintenance. Because here...
Maintenance, technical, well, you can look at it. See, maintenance depends upon how you... Like you see in the previous chapter, one of them uses nourishment. So you have maintenance on Sambandha, on Abhideya, on Prayojana. You have on all these levels. So a Sambandha level will mean things, because Sambandha means it's things. There's me, there's something, and there's God. And then how do I offer the thing to God? You know? Or there's myself, there's another living entity, and there's something in between. It may be an external item, it may just be the tone of my voice, it may be a gesture, you know, in some way something is there. Something is there, because the conditioned nature is, it's things, the gross body and the subtle are things. But because they're movable things, and we, you know, so used to dealing with it, we say they're I, they're us. But actually they're things. So it can be even... The paraphernalia may just be the body and the mind or the emotions. Or you may have then expand that. Is that then there's more paraphernalia. So it can, that nourishment can also mean that, but more important it means it can mean the gross body, but more important it means the subtle, and more important it means the platform of the soul.
So do you mean then in terms of everyday maintenance and
there the devotional process. It means that the what do you say? Is that the just we're inspired in serving the Lord. That inspiration is there, that remembrance of the Lord is there.
Brahmana means Vishwambar?
No, Vishwambar would be Abhideya. Gaura is Pranjana. Uh-huh. Chaitanya is Sambandha. Mm. Means in the Gayatri, the first is Sambandha, the second is Abhideya, the third is Prayojana. So they're all like that. Krishna, right? That's Madan Mohan. So Sambandha also, that means you have the paraphernalia, you have the ritual, but then the higher aspect is the attraction. Right? And then Prayojana will be the attachment or the need. You need that. And then Abhideya will be the process in between, or the activity. Yeah. Because the other two are not actually dynamic. It means ritual is there, but it's still just the paraphernalia, how the paraphernalia moves around, what mantra is there. You know, like that. So subtly it works and it purifies the subtle up to the consciousness. It means it does that mechanically. But the heart is what you're trying to get. You're trying to catch the mind, because the mind is the seat of the desires, and you want the desire to be to serve Krishna, to love Krishna. So that's why it's the central feature. Even though the intelligence is higher, like that, all this thing of the intelligence and the ego, the body, the senses, you're all that is being regulated and focused so you can catch the mind, control and catch the mind, and change it from the to the, impious to the pious, or meaning from the non-Krishna conscious to the Krishna conscious. That's what you're trying to achieve. When the mind then the mind is always thinking of Krishna. Then you don't need any amount. You don't need intellectualizing. You don't need to engage the senses. You don't need to engage the body. There is no ego. You could just think of Krishna. So therefore, whatever the modes of nature will move the body around. It's thirsty. Water will be drunk and this and that. But it's not your focus or care necessarily. It's like you see Lord Chaitanya was not overly worried whether he was on dry land or was in the ocean, or whether his face was moving through space or was hitting a wall. It doesn't matter. That's all up to Krishna takes care of those things. So the other is the attraction, the attachment, but that is then shown through the activity. Therefore, the Abhideya is the central feature. And then for us, then Govindaji became Samana Devi, and Rupa Goswami becomes the main charm. It's the second song. If you wish to slay someone, then who could possibly protect them? The three worlds are subservient to your will. The demigods headed by Lord Brahma are your countless servants who stand ready to execute your command. By your will, the planets incessantly exercise their auspiciousness or inauspiciousness. Their auspicious or inauspicious influences. Illness, grief, death, and fear occur by your will. Your command is all-powerful. In fear of you, the wind blows, the sun and the moon rise and set, all performing their regulated tasks. You are the Supreme Lord, the ultimate spirit, transcendentally situated beyond even the beyond. Your residence is the heart of your loving devotee. You are eternally pure. All your desires are already fulfilled. Your name is Bhaktivatsala, for you are the eternally affectionate Lord of your dear devotees. If you wish to protect someone, then who could possibly slay them? You are the law of all laws. Your servant Bhaktivinod has bowed down submissively at your lotus feet. O Lord, he cherishes the faith, O Master, that you will surely protect him from all dangers. So here we see now we're starting to introduce. One is the all these aspects of just Krishna and how he is controlling everything and doing everything. But we see it doesn't create on reverence. This is the thing, is that sometimes it's said if you point this out then that can only come from a platform of on reverence. No, that can be seen. It's obvious Krishna is running the place. And all this is going on. But we see that what it's creating is that appreciation of all this is going on, but you are in the heart of your devotee, and you are Bhaktivatsala, and you are you care. And if you take care, it will go on. If you not, you won't. Because here, in other words, he sees a relationship of that rasa with the Lord. That relationship with the Lord is being established here.
So he's submissive to the Lord and has full faith that the Lord will take care of him. So that kind of mood of that surrender means that I'm surrendering, but we have to see why we're surrendering. If surrender is there as long as we're going to get something, you know? But if we're surrendering just because of the relationship out of that attraction or affection like that, then, you know, come what will, that's not there, because it will not disturb the relationship. And it creates another atmosphere when it's like Krishna, he can behave, you know, badly with the gopis. It doesn't reduce their, you know, you don't hear them, you know, saying, forget this guy. It means they'll sit around and say that, but, you know, next moment they're with him. But it's just, it's something, some way to remember what he, all his pastimes. It's not that they're upset with him so they don't want to be with him because he's a nonsense, you know. But it's they're remembering those pastimes like this. So the whole thing is Krishna does what he wants, like that. And so therefore it becomes nice. As you see with Mother Yashoda, he plays and this and that, but it's all within the child within. But then Krishna in this, he goes beyond. Because if it's a matter of he can do anything and everything, whatever he wants, that gives a certain, it creates a certain atmosphere that's not created in other situations. It's a matter of, okay, the relationship's here, and then this is expected to be the return. You know, there's some variety within that. But it's based on, but here it's like, whatever you do, we're surrendered. Then that gives him that, the amount of variety, expansion of the pastimes, anything can be done. Like that. So therefore, you can just do so many things. The Lord's not restricted. And the love of the devotees is not restricted. So it takes on a whole different atmosphere. So we have to see is that surrender is not demanding a return. This is the thing. Because therefore, it's that Krishna is going to protect. You know? Whoever he wants us to be with here, you know, learn from here, you know, whatever facility, that's up to him. But that, to Krishna, that's full surrender, he will take care of whatever. You know? That, he will take care.
In Bombay, you said that we should, it's not Jananda that gives relationships, so we should develop a relationship. We should pray to him for that. But is relationship also given by Vrindavani?
That's within. Basically, it's once Nityananda Prabhu has been. See, because that's within. Vrindadevi is performing those activities, but within the conjugal rasa, within the Vrindavan conjugal rasa. She's not making arrangements for Mother Yashoda or for the Cowherd Boys or for, you know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
She's like doing, means like Yoga Maya is doing the big arrangement. But the whole point is Radha and Krishna. So all that's being done. And she concentrates just on Radha Krishna's pastimes. She organizes those, creates the, you know, the atmosphere and the facilities and that.
Mm.
You know, so it's like both of those things. So she does, yes. But that's along with is that the aspect is that Nityananda Prabhu is that, in other words, basically is that relationship can be established when we give up our attachments here. Means the more these are given up, that can be.
Mm-hmm.
Of course, one could technically directly do it, but the tendency is because of our conditioning, we will forget. We will be distracted. So by Nityananda Prabhu's mercy, one is able to give up one's attachment to this world. So then if Radharani gives shelter, you know, then one can actually do things. Otherwise, she's giving shelter, and then we're doing all nonsense.
it's going to be a great letdown in the relationship. Yeah, it's not going to be. Therefore, the mercy of Nityananda Prabhu is important. That's why the two rules are there: always remember and never forget. Like that.
Can you explain that once more? How that works?
Means you have, see, never forget means you won't be remembering something else. So that means you have to give up your attractions and attachments to this material world. Right? To never forget Krishna. Because you be, means what would you be thinking of other than Krishna? Right? It means something material. So never forget Krishna means that we give up the material attractions. And always remember Krishna means is that we're attracted to Krishna himself as a person. You know, we want to serve him. So we can see that everything is coming down from this. So all the rules and regulations that keep us controlled within the material world, you know, create an atmosphere of goodness, they're all coming from never forget. And all those activities that then inspire us to think of Krishna and be absorbed in Krishna, that's coming from always remembering. You know, it's just like chanting Hare Krishna free from offenses. That's always remembering, never forgetting. You see, so the two go together. You know, favorably performing devotional service. The devotional service is remembering. Favorably is not forgetting.
Repeat that word.
Favorably performing devotional service, right? Devotional service must be favorable. So the devotion, that's the remembering. That it must be favorable is not forgetting. That's why it is. Otherwise, it means the same thing. If you always remember, means you're not forgetting. And never forget means you're always remembering. But it's these are given because you have these two aspects. It means never forget gets you to liberation. Always remember gets you past liberation to pain. Therefore, never forget. Then there's knowledge. You know, who are you? Oh, yeah, okay, I'm small. You know, Krishna is God. Oh, yeah. So all these things make us never forget. So all that knowledge, regulations, you know, all these things come into here. So all the rules and regulations, like that, then these are always there. You know, that we could say is the yama. You know, and always remember is the neon. Like this. So everything comes back to these two. That's why it's that you have the Vaidhi Bhakti, but then the life of that is that there is, you're doing it to please somebody. So in the beginning it may be to please Guru, you know, or, you know, okay, like this, but you don't really know what's going on. But whatever, like this. So that's starting it. But then with time that expands, you know who the Guru is, you know who Krishna is, you know all the Acharyas, you know everyone's, the whole Krishna's associates and everything, and this whole Sankirtan movement. And in other words, it's not like you're here and they're there. You know, they're here and you're part of it. So the more one remembers, then the closer you are to them. And the more you forget, then the more we're far away. So it's to bring us close. At that. So these rules and regulations are for that. They bring one close. But it's not, that's why you see Prabhupada talk about real spiritual initiation. Like that. His initiation, Upanayana, is initiation. But it's not spiritual. It just brings one near. So that one could take up the spiritual. So these things are like that. They bring you near, that's all. But they themselves are not spiritual. They become spiritualized because of the
you know, the doing it for Krishna, doing it under order of Guru, and doing it according to the Shastra, like this, then that spiritualizes. It's bona fide coming in Parampara. But that is the it means, in other words, you have the item that's spiritualized and you have what is spiritualizing it. Right? So the always remembering Krishna, that is that's spiritual. Never forgetting it is what is being spiritualized. So therefore you're taking everything that makes you forget and connecting it to always remembering. So therefore, even though we're surrounded by the same material objects that we were surrounded by before, we are then uplifted because we've spiritualized them all.
I catch what you're saying.
Yeah?
Yeah.
You understand?
Yeah.
The thing itself isn't what makes us. But it has been spiritualized, so now we get that association. So that's the whole purpose of Varnashram and the Pancharatra Jiddhi. Is simply to do that. Surround us with material items and activities that but spiritualizing, they become empowered. And then in that good association, if we're always associating with things that are spiritualized, it is spiritual. It's as good as spiritual. So therefore, the whole Varnashram system, the Pancharatra system, all these different things, they become a means of upliftment. So that's why we can talk about Varnashram or the various rules and regulations as a means of liberation, but at the same time we can say that they don't give you the goal. Varnashram will not give you prema bhakti. Maximum can give you liberation, but that is of course only if you are so pious and qualified to perform it, which in this age is something very rare, if not impossible. So, Varnashram that's been empowered by spiritual potency, then is able to uplift one. In that way we don't use Varnashram on its own. We use Varnashram in connection with devotional service. It's been spiritualized, so we're doing it for Krishna. Therefore, it uplifts us and brings us to the liberated platform. Otherwise, on its own in this age, you know, how would it be followed? It wouldn't be possible.
So in essence what you're saying in terms of living and surviving is not to see the good and bad, but to see how everything is connected to Krishna, to spiritual.
That's the thing. So good and bad is what's good for Krishna and bad is what's not good for Krishna. Mm-hmm. It may be materially good, right? There's that 11th canto verse. I think it starts off sway dharma, I think. So in there it's explained that real piety means what is in connection with Krishna. And material activities, whether they're pious or impious, are considered impious.
Yeah, isn't it amazing? Put one in the second chapter about Prabhupada too, where he talks about, I think actually it's in the third chapter, where he talks about that verse Krishna says about keep all abominable activity by disturbing the practice of devotional service.
Mm.
And Prabhupada in the Prabhupada explains that abominable activity is anything that's not in relation to Krishna.
Yeah.
And abominable means it gives you birth and death, repeated birth and death.
Because the first stage is abominable, because anything sinful is not going to bring you closer to Krishna. So that's first cut off. But then anything pious that's not going to get you Krishna, that's next cut off.
Mm.
You know, you know, it's just like you start with the worst first.
Right.
You know? You know, it's like if you have a dog in your house making a mess and you have a fire, you first get rid of the fire. Then you kick out the dog. You know? So first is you get rid of sinful, because that's definitely going to take away. And then the pious, you have to discern that what is can be engaged in Krishna's service, so that's good. What can't be, that's bad. That's also thrown out. So therefore, when Krishna says sarva dharmam, it means what's in relationship to him, that's good. Not dharma because it's dharma. The Shastra says this, that's dharma. Okay, but if the Shastra says this and you can engage in Krishna's service, that we keep. That's Sarvadharma Padichaya. But if you say, no, but this says here, you know, at that, then what can you do? Then it's not good. Mm-hmm. You know, it's just like, you're supposed to always remember Krishna and never forget. That's the thing. So now, if that's just like there, you know, being very nice, you know, boy, going, asking my mother if I can go to this program, you know, where some you know, Indian spiritualist is speaking. And so that's Dharma, right? And then mother says no, so I'm following Dharma. I'm following the desire of my mother. But that's adharma. So that Dharma should have been rejected. Right? In other words, what's the use of it? It just is another birth and death. Okay, nice, pious, your mother told you something, you listened, you know? Okay, great. But what was the result? Nothing spiritual. So in that case, to not have listened would have been spiritually beneficial. So therefore, that aspect of Dharma is not Dharma, actually. Because real Dharma is Krishna, serving Krishna. But in this material world, if you don't serve Krishna, then there's this perverted form of Dharma that, at least you follow that, is Krishna's law. Right? Means best is you surrender unto him, right? He's the one that nourishes you. If you can't do that, at least surrender to your mother. Right? But of the two, then, you know, Krishna stays, mother goes. Right? Because Krishna's eternal. He's still going to be there next life. Mother's not.
That's what Bhagavan says.
He's
my mother,
he's
my father.
Yeah. So Krishna's all that. Plus, that potency of motherhood is coming from Krishna. So the mother has been empowered with that. That soul on their own is not a mother. Right? But they've been empowered by the principal potency of motherhood. So even that's Krishna. So you can say, yes, mother is Krishna, father is Krishna. But it's not them, it's not that body. It's that potency which has empowered that body. And that is coming from Krishna. So Krishna is the mother. We're thinking it's my mother is so kind. No, it's Krishna is so kind. He is taking care. Father is son and his father. Friend, you know, husband, wife, this, that. We're thinking it's no, it's Krishna. We're thinking, oh, such a nice husband, such a nice wife. But it's actually it's Krishna. He's doing it because he's empowering. So therefore, there's the pure perverted form. Or the natural perverted form of the culture, you know, where a husband acts properly according to Dharma, a wife according to Dharma, a mother according to Dharma, the child according to Dharma, like this. Then you see it in its natural state that if you look at it and see what's going on, it externally looks like what's going on in the spiritual world. It looks very similar. Like that. At the same time, it's perverted because Krishna is not the center of it. But if you know, that's why then the Shastras give these aspects of Jnana. This is what Jnana is supposed to be used for. Is that then you're going to see beyond that into Krishna. So therefore, you see Krishna everywhere. It's his potency. So actually, it's Krishna who's nourishing me. It's Krishna who's the authority and protecting. It's Krishna, right?
That's what you're talking about the other night when you talked about Swargya Rasa.
No, well, this is taking the Swargya and then looking beyond them. Where did it come from? The potence coming. Swargya is still material.
But that's what's manifesting in this perverted.
Yeah, that's the natural perverted form is the Swargya rasa. Mm-hmm. Like that. Then you see that then they all become weird, you know, all perverted this and that. You know, mother's walking around in a miniskirt and this and that. You know, she's got one eye on the baby and one eye on whoever's walking around. So that's not really a motherly mood. Motherly mood is full. Like that. So then, but it's not. So then the children don't actually taste that. So therefore, their gross and subtle bodies, which are material, don't get developed properly. And then because you're dealing with inferior quality of gross and subtle bodies, then therefore also their intelligence isn't so developed. It's hard for them to understand points. Or emotionally they're underdeveloped, so then when you give them a comparison, an analogy, they can't understand it. Because they don't know what is emotion. They don't know what all these things are. So it's very difficult for them. You know, like what's his name? Kripamurthy in England was explaining. He was preaching to one boy. They brought an example of Krishna as the father, and the boy couldn't relate to it at all. It meant nothing to him, zero, because he never had a father or any male figure in his life who was an authority. So he didn't know the principle. You couldn't explain it to him. God is a father. What does that mean? It was just a blank. So someone who's had a father or had someone who's an authority, then you say God's a father, and then it's kind of like you take the one and kind of put it on the other. Yes. And then as you become purified, then you actually understand what that means, and then this one fades. But it's used as a stepping stone. So Swarkiya can be used as a stepping stone to the other. But it itself is not. Because otherwise then you get these perversions, where like Sahajis will say, well, unless you've tasted material conjugal rasa, you can't understand the spiritual conjugal rasa. You know? So therefore they engage in all nonsense, you know, like that. Or unless you yourself have been a biological parent, you can't understand parenthood. It is a rasa. You understand one side of it, you can understand another. You know? So it's like someone who's eating strawberries and someone else is eating bananas, and they say, unless you've tasted strawberries, you can't understand what is fruit. What do you mean? I can eat a banana and understand what's fruit. Or an apple and understand what's fruit. But then people say, no, unless you've tasted strawberries. So unless you're a biological parent, you can't understand parenthood. You know, but then you can say yes. But then, unless you've been a teacher, you can't understand what a teacher is. Unless you've been, you know, an administrative authority, you can't understand what that is. You can't, unless you've been a demigod, you can't. You know, it's all the same rasa. So it can be, from one you can understand the other. Though they have different flavors within. You know, just like a banana has a different flavor than a strawberry, but it's still fruit. And you can appreciate and understand fruit from there. You know, so then you can explain a strawberry. Yes, it's a little more sour than a banana, a little bit more watery. You know, because you know it is a banana, so then you'd say, okay, you know, like that. And then you have a pretty, you know, really good idea. So like this, then the Swargiya rasa, then if it's in that form, it makes it a little easier to understand. But at the same time, is the problem with it is because it's materially the most pleasant you can get here in the material world, the tendency is to become distracted and attached to it. Right? Devotees are talking, you know, it's, you know, material, you know, material life is rough because they're having rough material life. Or marriage life is rough because they're having a rough marriage life. If their marriage was going perfect, all their economics were taken care of, and everything was going fine for them, would they be thinking of Krishna? Right? And if they were advanced, maybe. But we see the demigods don't. And then when something goes wrong, then they remember Krishna.
You see that a lot with
Sakini
family, highly cultured, wealthy Sakini
families. Oh, any of the pious families, good Marwaris, good Gujarati, anybody who comes from really cultured, they're totally into it, absorbed in it. Mm. Very, very much. And so it's a distraction. So it's a useful tool. Means it's a more useful tool than impious life. But because it creates attachment, therefore it's a problem. But now the more sinful life then creates, if it's, you know, because of its nature, when you run its course, it creates detachment. So it's also in that way can be useful. But the problem is then when you want to behave nicely, you don't have any samskaras to do it. You don't know what is nice.
You have all the puttan to deal with.
Yeah, that's it. But it's just, you don't know what it is. You wouldn't know, okay, here it is, you know, you grew up and your mother, father fought like cats and dogs, everybody else fought like cats and dogs, you know, you yourself have been through, you know, 15, 20... you know, relationships before becoming devotee, this and that. And now it's like, okay, now we're going to sit down and we're going to be nice, Vedic, you know, husband, wife, and this and that. You wouldn't have a clue what it is, you know? You know, I mean, the closest you get is, okay, we sit on a bench somewhere and read from, you know, the Bhagavatam on the, you know, the, you know, the nice parts. There's a couple of, one or two chapters where it talks about the niceties of Grihastha life. But, yeah, and then they read that, you know, and jar. Okay. Okay, now what do you do for the other, you know, 23 and a half hours? You know? And then, okay, that was today. What do you do tomorrow? You know? Okay, let's read through the chapter again. That was great. Okay, so after a while, then it's because you don't know. You wouldn't have a clue. So therefore, if that pious thing is there, if you have those needs, it makes it much easier to deal. You have to deal with other people, live with other people. So if you had some clue of it, you know, even if it was in a non-Vedic atmosphere, as long as there was some touch of it, means it wasn't totally away from, you know, like that. Then, so it becomes helpful, but it's not ultimately important. Ultimately, it's remembering Krishna. So when we connect everything to Krishna, then that's the ultimate. But it's really hard to connect to Krishna that, you know, you behave like an ogre and are nasty and can't relate to anybody. You know, so it's really hard to engage that, you know, spiritualize that. You know? So that's that, where then all these difficulties that, you know, you speak of, that's simply because devotees don't actually understand what it is. You know? Otherwise, if you kind of, you had an experience of it, but you didn't connect it to the situation, someone explains it, you'll connect it. And then, oh, because you tasted it, therefore you know, oh, I have to get that flavor in this situation. So you know what to look for, therefore a little this way, that way. If you know how to cook, and you have a basic idea of what it's supposed to taste like, you tasted it somewhere, you know how to cook, but you don't know how to cook that preparation. Then you kind of let go, because you know what you're trying to get to. You know, a little more salt, a little less, a little this, that, you know, fry it more or less, or more water, less water. And you start to get. Now if somebody tells you, you know, do this, 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 you've never cooked it, but you know cooking. Right? So then you can get it. So that's the whole idea of this, that the material piety is useful in as much as it can be connected to Krishna. Otherwise, it's just a distraction. It's just a distraction. And devotees have a tendency, they want to be distracted by it. That's the thing. They desire to be distracted by it.
What do you mean by that?
They're getting married because they do want to have a pleasant time. They do want to get absorbed in all these different things. Like that. If they're more trained and smart, then they understand that I have those desires, I want those desires, but now I have the knowledge how to engage in a Krishna service, so even though that's going on, I'm becoming purified. Yeah. Like, no one wants to eat bad-tasting prasad. They want to be nice, but they know they're also getting purified. Like that. So that's the whole thing. So that's, they're expecting from that they'll get. But the problem is unless it's really strong, the foundation, one will be distracted. And when one gets distracted, then if one gives up the spiritual, then it's punar musika bhava. You know, you don't have nice, pious, Vedic couple anymore. You have Western, middle class, you know, Anglo-Saxons, you know. You know, that's what you end up with. You know, you look at their lifestyle, how they talk, how they interact, and that's what you got. So it started off very nice on the emotional platform and ended up over in this, you know, sub-emotional platform. But they didn't notice the change. While if they had the samskaras, they would notice the change, so they would keep it there. But then the problem is then they wouldn't notice the change between material and spiritual. Here is it that the spiritual goes down and the material quality of the material goes down. So if one's pious, the material quality will remain. But the spiritual quality will get clouded or covered by it. So that's why strong association and strong training beforehand is necessary. If there's not strong training, is, you know, before marriage, then it's very, very difficult to maintain the standards in marriage. Even if one, you know, all the principles and all the rules, but the mood may be lost. That fire. So one always has to keep that up. by what's previous, there's some momentum created, and by others' association, and then slowly, slowly they get through until the last gasp, you can get your finger across the line at the end of marriage, you know, enough for someone to grab on the other side and pull you across, you know, so as long as you get enough to get you over to that, then, you know, then you're okay. So here he sees that mood, that surrender is more, you know. So it's going to another step, you know. Like I was saying before, we're surrendering to Guru because we don't want to wait, and we want some results. So we don't want to waste our time here because we want to get out of here, right? So we surrendered, and then the person went away, and so they're not very helpful in getting us out of here, and so this is a waste of time, right? So that's part of it. That's the half. That's the never forget Krishna. But what's coming out in this part is the always remembering Krishna. So that part, you know, means even the other part, it goes on. One just keeps, you know, I would say, you know, keeps changing buses and taxis and bicycles and rickshaws and, you know, and like that, and walking and, you know, whatever, you know. One gets there, but, you know, it's not the most idyllic or, you know, like that. It's not necessarily a story out of Bhagavatam, you know.
Actually, Bhagavatam stories are usually not idyllic.
Yeah.
They're usually trouble.
Yeah.
So, usually problem cases.
Yeah. So, because that's the material world. It's never... Means you hear there is one perfect marriage, Kardama and Devahuti. Then how much is it talked about? You know, a few shlokas. That's it. Right? Because it goes so nice. It's just, well, that's what it's supposed to be. Right? If everything went how it's supposed to be, you know, you could explain the whole Varnashram system. You know, probably in you know a few verses. Wouldn't take many verses. Like that. But because it doesn't go right, the material world doesn't work right, therefore there's so many rules for the Varnashram system, so many rules in the Pancharatric system. You know, there's so many side things even within the Bhagavat to keep it, you know, all the offenses and all these things too, like that, or, you know, getting caught up in the knowledge and these other things like that. You know, that you get, you think that by, in other words, it's just this simple thing. I did the activity, I get the result. It's also I have the knowledge, I get the result. But you have to take the knowledge and the activity and do it for Krishna, then you get the result. Mm. That's the thing.
Now, what was the essence of the difference between offense and offenseless and pure?
Offenseless means you did nothing wrong. Well, it can be the same. Pure just means that there's nothing else there, like that. But then when you get to a certain level, then that pure means that it has that love. So pure unalloyed, then it means there's just love for Krishna. There isn't something else. But otherwise, pure means, for us mainly, the pure is the determination is pure. You know, the vow is pure, the consciousness is pure. Conscious means the conscious effort is pure. The subconscious, the anarthas in the heart and all that, that we're not looking at. Because if those weren't there, then we would say something. So that, therefore, you can have a Kanista pure devotee, a Madhyam pure devotee, an Uttam pure devotee. Like that. It's mentioned in connection with Tapanisra. Mm. Like that. Because it means there exactly the definition is being pointed out is that he didn't know how to defeat them. Mm. You know, he was just absorbed in the Leela with Lord Chaitanya, and he hadn't you know, studied all these books that he could go out and logic and argument and, you know, Vedanta and all that to go and defeat them in argument. Mm. So therefore he heard all this nonsense and didn't like it and left. Like that. But he's given as example the Kanista pure devotee. It means his faith is not disturbed. Though he didn't know what to say,
his faith wasn't disturbed. A Madhyama would try to say something and may get defeated, but his faith wouldn't be disturbed. And then the Uttama would know what to say. So from that angle, then he is considered
third class.
Huh? Uttama wouldn't be involved in... No, but Uttama can act as a Madhyama.
Oh, coming down to Madhyama.
Yeah,
yeah. Yeah.
Like that. Like that, because you know they're beyond, so then they see, they can see exactly, you know, what is more, it is that, so then they can always attract, they can always attract and defeat. There's no one can defeat
them. An attractive principle is theirs because they're seeing themselves as Krishna's instrument.
Yeah, and just the pure person is very attractive. They know how to speak. They're very, you know, they have all good qualities, all the natural good qualities of the soul manifest. So there's a spiritual morality that the soul has.
Mm.
So that manifests.
Mm.
You know, material morality, that spiritual. So they're on a totally different. They're not. No one feels threatened by them because they're not trying to establish themselves.
Mm.
Right? They're simply. You know, it means somebody gets disturbed because there's that chivalry, you know, you're trying to establish yourself, they're trying to... No, it's not there. They're just speaking for your benefit, that's all. So they're just a friend, so you can't get too disturbed.
And that step that happens between the last two sons' marriage, where in the second to last song he's on the platform of singing himself as a cow or bucko, and the next song he's on the word of Manjari.
That I guess means we'll come to into that another time.
Mm-hmm.
Because it's like you see in these others that it goes through different levels.
Mm-hmm.
The previous one. You know, it's this humility, forgiving his offenses, this and that. So one is seeing that one has all kinds of nonsense and all that. So that would be like in that, like I said. Then here he's renouncing his, next is he's renouncing his independence. So the first one is he has his own ideas, but he sees it's not good. So he's coming, then this next, it renounces his independence. So this is basically like your Madhyama platform. You know, he's seeing here that the Lord, everything's working according to this, and he's behind everything. In other words, with that knowledge that is there, he's operating it to actually remember the Lord. You know, he's not using the knowledge to, you know, for karma. You know, he's using it for understanding Krishna, bringing himself closer to Krishna.
Mm-hmm.
And then the other is that, you know, we have so many nartas, we're trying to give those up, we're trying to surrender to the Lord. You know, so then this would be those, you know, through like Vajna Kriya Narta Nirviti. And here would be like your Nishta and all that. Yeah, and this nourishment, then you would see, then that would be, that has to start from Ruchi on. Yeah, Ruchi Shakti and all that. And then here is just, you know, he's just, you know, completely surrendered to the Lord. So there's nothing here. There's no blood. So that would be, and beyond this, you know, like that, Sakti Bhava, it's just nothing. So we see the steps take through. So they're all applicable at all times, but it just, which will be the more prominent, like that. They're so wonderfully written that one can get benefit from all of them, no matter what one's back from. You know, here he's saying, you know, I've just surrendered to you, so that's already, you're taking that Madhyama platform. You know, and here as we see is that, you know, so you are surely protecting from all dangers, so now you're coming into an advanced platform, like that one, the symptoms of Baba. It's just that complete faith in the Lord, he'll take care of it. everything like that. So these ones are starting from basically almost like from the Madhyama into the, you know, lower stages of Uttama, into the beginning stages of Bhava. And I think when these next ones then get into to those higher stages. So we see that the moods behind them, they take us through.
That was a question.
Yes, please. One means we were. See, we were asking a question, and we should say something also.
No, I'd like to. Also, you can elaborate a little bit. On surrender, and specifically one aspect of the surrendering, I never really heard it in that light before, it was very nice. And that was surrendering so the Lord has freedom to act in any way, unlimitedly. He's not, none of these devotees surrounding have any, they're so surrounded that he can do exactly what he wants, so he can expand on it. Because someone was asking the question the other day, that why is Lord Chaitanya rejected Ramananda's, I mean, he said it was when he said Sarvadharma Pityajaya, Ramananda, I said that verse, and he said, no, go higher. And he's saying, well, we think that surrender is, you know, it's the highest principle, why Ramananda rejected it. And the answer was given that he said on a more advanced platform, then one understands that he has nothing to renounce anyway. So it's, he's therefore, he wants, yeah. But in the aspect you were speaking of now, it seems a different type of surrender and a different platform that you're surrendering so the Lord can expand on everything, so he can use you in any way you want to. Yeah. It wasn't so much giving up everything, but it's more.
Yeah. It's beyond this karma and jnana. That's the thing, is that we talk about these things because these are tangible for us. You know, and so then we push those things, and because the living entity, you know, either wants to be in the material world or get out of the material world. So we use these things as tools. You know, just like Prabhupada, you know, the Westerners are very, very, can't think of any positive words. You know, they're very
proactive.
Yeah, I mean, it's just this, if they're into it, the whole world's into it. You know, it's just like, you know, you turn everything upside down to make it happen. You know, it's just the motive passion is so powerful. So they have to do something big. It can't be small. You know, it has to be big. So then Prabhupada would use that in Krishna's service. Let's do something big for Krishna. You know, he says the whole world's going to become Krishna conscious, so let's do it. You know, it's big. You know, so then he engages that side. Now, of course, if you look at it, you know, many times the moods and the devotees would deal with each other may not be proper. They may be may not be properly humble, or they may be taking too much credit for they're not feeling themselves an instrument, this and that. But the point is that they've done it to, you know, please Krishna and Krishna's devotees. So it's like that. But their whole attitude may, you know, need some development. So that's encouraged because it keeps me engaged. It's something that could be used in Krishna's service. So that's engaged. And all the other stuff we don't look at. And as you become purified, then you can start to look at these other things. But ultimately, if one becomes a pure devotee, all those things go away anyway. You know, if you get the Sarup Lakshana, the other Lakshanas will manifest. You know, that surrender to Krishna, that mood that I am Krishna's devotee. So these externals are not so, means they're important in the beginning because that's all you have, that's all you can recognize. Means in the beginning, seeing subtleties, like recognizing the mind, you know, the movement of the mind in another person, you know, or the application of their intelligence or their kind of ego, it may in the beginning you don't see, you just see the person's body. It's Krishna's trip. It's a Vedic trip. But ultimately they have to go beyond that. So you encourage these things. But ultimately then there's more beyond that has to be left. It has to be given up. You know, because there's other things. It's not that the activity has to be given up, but the mentality that's there in doing it. So it may be the person's nature, just by their condition, that they like big beads, okay. And so they can wear big neck beads and be perfectly humble and natural. Someone else, they're only wearing the big neck beads because they want to show that they got bigger neck beads than anybody else's neck beads, so therefore they're superior. You know, they're the big deal. So that person might find that when they become humble, they would naturally do well with small neck beads. Right? So, like that. So you have to see, it depends on... But the thing itself is secondary to the devotion, but an expert person knows how to take that and engage it. You know, like Tirumangai Alwar, he was able to engage thieves in the Lord's service. He built a wall around Sri Rangam by their expertise. So all the money they stole, and he built the wall. Big, huge wall, I think 20 foot high wall. Very thick, like this thick. Big wall. So that all came from, you know, he had three people. You know, one could hide in his own shadow, one could walk on water, and one could open any lock. So the three of them would go out and, you know, bring back the wages to pay the laborers the next day. So like that. So he engaged even dacoits in the Lord's service. Because, you know, they're beyond the dualities of the world. So therefore, it's engaged in Krishna's service is perfect. That's what is. That's just like a mother. What does she see? The relationship the son has with her, or his other activities? You know, if the relation is all right with her, the other activities are there. Then it may or may not be so good, but whatever. It doesn't disturb the relationship. So they just overlook that. So that's the thing. It's the Lord and his devotees. They overlook the downside. And they simply engage. You find what you could do for Krishna and do that. You know? Monkeys like to jump and fight. Okay, so then Ramachandra engages them. You know? So then you know, it's not like, you know, a bunch of monkeys. What can they do? You know? So it's that is engaged. So then Prabhupada's very expert in taking. So the surrender then, I say. Yeah.
Not sure. But isn't that level that Janina Das is referring to, isn't that more in the mood of the shloka, which is more mud?
More?
In the mood of Shasaska 8, which is Madhurya.
That's anything. It's going to be the most there because everything's there and that full surrender is there. But still within the Madhurya, you know, Rukmini doesn't have that particular surrender.
Well, it's Madhurya that speaks that verse.
Yeah. So it's not just Madhurya.
No.
It's in particular because then things can happen. Means Rukmini, how Krishna deals with Rukmini, it's got to just go that way. You know, it has to be, you know, it's according to the to Swakya Bhav. So there's rules. Krishna will only touch them in a certain way at a certain time in a certain place. The gopis, he does all kinds of stuff. You know?
That level is actually in terms of grudge surrender.
Yeah. That's Radharani's verse. That's within, because it's like your seventh verse is Mahabhav. But within that Mahabhava, then there's Radharani's mood is then unique. Otherwise, all the gopis are in Mahabhava. So then that is unique there. Whatever. So that's the special. Because then so many things can be done. You know? He's sitting there and he's always trying to grab someone, this, that. And they steal his flute, you know. So it's you know, the gopi takes it, holds it behind her back. So then he could, the normal thing was, is if something like, a game like that came up in the palace. And, you know, Rukmini and, you know, some of the other queens took something of Krishna's and they hid it behind her back. Krishna would walk around behind them. You know, he would go quickly. But with the gopis, he doesn't bother with that. He just embraces them. That wouldn't be done in the other one. So it wouldn't be allowed. So it's not that it means that he can do whatever he wants as long as it fits into the rules. Like that. But here he can do whatever he wants. You know, they take the flute, right? Yeah. A flute is how big? Right? And how big is a choli? Right? No question that a flute could be hidden in a choli. Right? But, you know, he feels, you know, obliged in his investigations to check if they've hidden the flute in their choli. Right? And he's not generally looking in the backs or the side of the choli. He's generally checking out the front. Like that. So, he can do whatever he wants. You know? You know, Manjaris aren't touched. But he can try. Doesn't mean he'll get away with it. And he can do whatever he wants. That's the thing. So it gives a thing that you will see an aspect of Godhead that no one else in the cosmic creation will see. You know, even with the other gopis, Chandravali and the other right wing, still there's something is there, you know? And because that surrender is so much is there, then it takes on a different flavor while we're out around, then it's different. It's different. So that it becomes a uniqueness, it's there. That's the speciality of the line. That is not seen anywhere else. It's not seen in other camps. So those followers of Rupa, then you see this. Otherwise, other lines you won't see. Yeah, so that surrender is another dimension. Because we're using surrender as a tool, right? You surrender to somebody, you expect something. Like wife surrenders to husband. But it's not that she's surrendering and expecting nothing. She's expecting something. He's going to take care of this, that. You know, provide so much things. And like Krishna tells to Rukmini there. Mm. You know? Okay. Yeah. O most beautiful Rukmini, you are my dearmost wife. I am greatly pleased to understand how much love you have for me. Please take it for granted that no matter what ambition and desire you may have, and no matter what you might expect from me, I am always at your service. And it is a fact also that my devotees, my dear most friends and servitors, are always free. Okay, that's another bit here, that point. Because that's where it comes from. Is that in this world that, you know, the wife is expecting by that surrender and that show of affection, that will be the reaction. That whatever her desires are, anything, the husband will do his best to try to fulfill it.
The whole culture is shaped that way.
not only with wife and husband, but also with child and father and teacher and student. It's all for a
So the whole, I say, it has that flavor to it. So in the spiritual world, then it's pure, in that there's for Krishna's pleasure, but at the same time as your own pleasure may be involved also, as we see in Dwarka, that something is there. But in Vrindavan, even that's given up. Therefore, he can do whatever he wants. You know, Vrindavan is Dwarka, it's the rule. He goes out, he does this, he sits in his court, this and that. He gets up at this time, all these things. So then everybody else, because they're working on that platform, then even though they don't like, then it goes. You know? But like you see, you know, Nanda Baba and Shodamaya and that, Krishna wants to take the cows out. And then, you know, even though it's his dharma as a Vaishya, But Mother Jashoda is like, you know, well, you know, Nanda Baba has sufficient servants, they can take the cows out. You know, you don't have to take the cows out. You know, it's like, you know, there's no need. And it's just, they want to just be with Krishna, that's enough. You know, those other aspects of Dharma don't get in the way of their love. It doesn't restrict their love. You know? It itself is something they may use, but it's not an impetus. Well, in Dwarka, then it is an inspiration. You know, Krishna is so dharmic, or such a perfect husband, or such a perfect friend, or such a perfect king. You know, he's perfection, or Ram, he's the perfect lord, perfect king, perfect husband, perfect son, perfect. Krishna is, you know, it's like, you know, it's, you know, cheating on his mother, cheating on his girlfriends, cheating on his friends. Only ones he doesn't cheat are the cows, really. You know? Like that, you know? He takes them out and they eat grass and he goes off somewhere else. But the friends think he's playing with them. And they're so absorbed that he sneaks off. Right? Like that. He's supposed to be with one group of gopis, he's with another. He's supposed to be in bed sleeping at night and all that, and his mother's thinking, you know, how he's, you know, getting proper rest. And he's crying out the window and gone out to the forest. You know, so it's... Therefore, he's having a good time. These other places, he's having a good time because they're rasa, but here he can really have a good time. So in Vrindavan, he can just... He does whatever he likes, and everybody's happy. I'm not sure if that answered your question, because I started talking about it to such a tangent that I forgot what the question was.
That's the great insight of that verse in the Srishti.
Say thank you.
It's a greater insight now to that verse in the Srishti.
Because it's no matter what he does, he's fine. See, we have sometimes a tendency when Krishna takes care, then we're surrendered. When he doesn't take care, we're not so surrendered. But there it's saying, you know, even if you're going off with someone else, if it pleases you, then we're happy. Like that, because the whole idea is that you want the other person to be, the other person's happiness is your happiness, right? So even if that's your unhappiness, so that's a very rare thing, you know, very rare. Well, I think we should stop here. Prabhupada ki.
Okay. Okay.